Atlas Butler is built to keep you comfortable, and our plumbing services are no exception. You can rely on Atlas Butler for trusted, convenient plumbing and drain service. Our expert plumbers and drain specialists can take care of anything, from a broken water heater to a clogged drain. Call today, get it fixed today. That's our pledge to you.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Sports Destination.
Hello, friends. You're now listening to the Lifestyle, Leisure, and Sports Show you never knew was two of those things.
I think we can all acknowledge that if this fails, you two will be fired and I will remain. So, no pressure.
Bo Bishop, a regional media icon. Winner of Emmys. Purveyor of the good life.
Sir, you don't know that for a fact.
I just said it on the radio.
Also, two guys this company named Employee of the Month.
What are you talking about?
Paul Hogan is Hulk Hogan's brother.
Look it up.
Because it's Hulk Hogan. That's his real name.
One guy is from Australia. The other one is from Tampa.
You mean he's from Hollywood, brother?
Not brothers. Chops.
Yes, they are.
This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, let's do a live on a Friday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. Tim May coming up at 10:33. Doug LaMaurice, 11:33. What we learned this week at 11 o'clock. What we learned is the draft is still pretty fun. Here's another thing that we learned, and after being around the NFL now 6-7 years or whatever it's been, and having gone to the NFL Combine for many of those years, the real truth is there, and it takes a lot to change it, and we'll get to Penix in a second, but the chalk held off the top of this draft. The guys that were established early were the guys that were drafted last night high. Marv went 4. We've been saying it for 18 months. He's the best position player in the draft. Non-quarterback, he'd be the first one off the board. Guess what he was? He was the first one off the board. Caleb Williams is obviously a no-brainer off the top. Jaden Daniels, Drake May. Probably a year ago, May would have been ahead of Daniels. I think that's for sure. But Daniels' season propelled him up to 2. Then Marv goes 4. And the chalk kind of went from that point on until Atlanta did what Atlanta did with Michael Penix. And that was the first real curveball of the draft. I can tell you that one of the things that was talked about all the way back in February at the Combine is that the Raiders were pretty enamored with Michael Penix, that they liked him a lot, that he fit kind of everything that they wanted from the quarterback position with the big arm. And many, some people have said he's the best deep ball thrower in this draft. And so had the Falcons not taken him at 8, perhaps he would have gone at 13, but it did lead to one of the most awkward shots I've ever seen from a war room with Arthur Blank looking to be pissed off at Fontenot, the general manager, at least looking like, hey, you got to explain this to me, what we did here. And then you start to get the stuff that comes out afterwards that Kirk Cousins, while he was notified that potentially they were looking quarterback, he was shocked that they actually took one. I was talking to a buddy of mine who's a longtime Falcons fan last night. He's like, I like it. I'm like, geez, I don't think you're a serious organization. Like, you can be a three, you could have added a major player on the defense. You could have added somebody up front. They probably don't need any more weapons. Roma Dunzier was there at that time. They could have just been an overwhelming offensive machine had they gone that way, but instead they go Penix. And I think the reason for it is pretty simple, and you may not like it or it may be a bit of a surprise, but I think it just really comes down to you draft a quarterback until you get one. And I think that's what they're thinking here is Cousins for 2 years, Penix sits for 2, learns. It's the Jordan Love thing. That worked out pretty good. Mahomes sat for 1 year. He sits for a couple of years and then he goes. And that'll be something that only time will tell us if that actually paid off. But aside from that, it was chalk all the way back in February. Broncos. Knicks is probably the guy they like the best. You go follow Ben Albright, he'll tell you. Go look at his stuff. He's been on that beat for a long time. That was the guy that Sean Payton liked, and that's who they picked. J.J. McCarthy to the Vikings. We said if there was one place for J.J. McCarthy to go where he'd have potential for success, it was in that system that O'Connell runs. It was with those receivers. He's a cerebral kid. He'll be able to put his back to the defense. He'll trust it. He'll flip his head. He'll see somebody open. He'll throw it. That's the offense he's going to in Minnesota. So Minnesota liked McCarthy. That's been the worst-kept secret of the whole draft process. For them, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, the general manager up there, I knew him when he was in Cleveland with the Browns, he kind of cat-ate-the-canary situation. He gets the quarterback he wants by moving up one spot. He moves up a little bit the back half of the first round and gets the defensive player he wanted. They have a monster draft. If McCarthy turns out to be a nice player, that's a home run. Now, I will say this morning, I've told you guys before on this program that I had the boys pick non-AFC teams in case it goes south for the Browns.
Or okay. All the
Browns. So I'm like, pick a non-AFC team. So Bootsy's big Vikings. And last night as we were waiting, I said, I could see him going McCarthy. And he goes, and he just looked at me and he goes, I hate J.J. McCarthy. And I said, why? And he goes, he's from Michigan. And I said, yeah, he is. But like, you know, it's, you get to the league and every bygones be bygones. And so this morning when he woke up and he found out they took McCarthy, he goes, well, at least they have a mid quarterback now. That was his response to it, but it was fun. It was really fun off the top. It was chalk off the top. I'm constantly reminded with this thing that really what is known or talked about at the combine 9 times out of 10 guys comes home to roost by the time you get to the draft. There aren't that many zigs and zags.
I want to start with you, Bootsy there, because I think, you know, he's a kid. So like, of course he thinks that way. That makes total sense. But I don't quite get the adult thought process on that, because if a really good player from Michigan was in the transfer portal and he wanted to come to Ohio State, we'd take him. We'd put yeah. if he made the Buckeyes better, we'd take him. So yeah, I get
we
it.
Took Justin Bourne.
He's your rival. When he's wearing a block M, I'm still gonna look at JJ McCarthy with a side eye. But if I was a Vikings fan, I'd be ready to say, okay, we've got a new quarterback and see how it works. They'd reach up and get him just inside the top 10, did not have to give up as much as they maybe thought, because there was talks right as the pick was happening that the Patriots definitely took calls from people, including the Vikings at number 3, but they eventually just hold on to it and they go with Drake May. I'm really glad the Penix pick happened, because while still exciting NFL draft wise, I think that if I was like power ranking some of the previous drafts, this one had so much less intrigue, especially because he's, like you mentioned, all the chalk that goes through there. And then it started to pick up a little bit, but it still just wasn't the most exciting first round for me. But the Penix one stands out so much. And at first, I was like everybody. I was kind of shocked and surprised. And man, I did not see that coming. What are they thinking? But I wanted to take some time and think about it and look at it and see what everybody else does in the draft, because people fire enough tweets right away. Don't do that. You're never going to get your actual opinion out there. It's unlikely that your opinion from when you were like the moment you were shocked at a pick is going to match your actual opinion for it. Because the more I thought about it, yes, he's a little bit older, but this isn't drafting 28-year-old Brandon Whedon like the Browns did. He's actually younger than Bo Nix. Penix will be 24 on May 8th. So he'll be 24 when the season starts, which is a little bit older. And obviously Kirk Cousins is in front of him, but Kirk Cousins isn't getting any younger. He's coming off a lower body injury. And all we've done for the last 3-4 years is kind of scratch our head with, what is Atlanta doing? Why do they keep accumulating Bijan Robinson and Kyle Pitts and Drake London, all these weapons, and there's no way to cultivate them? And then they finally go out and go get a quarterback. Yes, you're right. They have Kirk Cousins right now, but Kirk Cousins isn't going to be around for the long haul. He's getting older. I like the pick, actually, overall, and I like the idea of him sitting around. And I think quarterbacks are on such a different time frame that even if he has to wait 2 years, I understand Cousins' deal is 4 years, but it's really 2 years. That's where all the guaranteed money is located. If he waits 2 years and he's 26 at the start, that's still 10 years of prime quarterback, essentially, if he is the guy. And I think that's a perfectly reasonable thing to spend the number 8 overall pick on. So yeah, it could not work out, but so could a player that is a weapon for them that they pick at number 8. We see that every year that people miss on that. So after I thought about it more, I'm not saying it's the best pick in the world, but I don't hate it, and I do understand the planning from it. But in the moment, yes, I was like Arthur Blank, like,
it's kind
of
fun.
Guys got some explaining to do.
Yeah
also fun. You shouldn't let your owners do the picking. That's, you know, why they hired you. So it does feel like that was a situation where, like, this could work out really well or blow up in the faces of Falcons management. And that's what this is. That's what makes this so much fun, is because we were all Arthur Blank in that moment. But then you also have to step back and realize, like, that he's not picking and he shouldn't be. Like, if he gets enamored, well, then he's Jerry Jones, right? And he's just running the whole department, and you don't want that. Look, for the Michigan thing, if Chris Jenkins is there for the Browns at 54,
it doesn't matter.
What the hell? I don't care what he wore in college. Is he the best player, one of the best interior defensive end or defensive linemen available? Then the Browns should consider him at 54. If Michael Hall's there, okay, consider him. If there's a safety that I saw the other day that could be there, wide receiver help, like, this is the time where, and again, I think as NBC gets older, he'll understand this. You take who's the best for your team then.
Yeah, and I think the big trend, so you mentioned it not being as exciting. I think six quarterbacks in the first 12 picks. So usually a draft gets exciting in the late first round where there's trades to come get a guy who's falling. None of them fell. The big trend in this draft was offensive players. It was offensively dominated draft.
It wasn't a defensive player until 15. Draft.
Right. It was well into it. So you had six quarterbacks gone by the first 12 picks. Half the first 12 picks are quarterbacks. It was absolutely nuts. So I think all of those things lead to that trend. The other thing I will say, nobody knows anything. So when people come out and say Penix is going to suck or this is, you don't know. You don't have the first clue. Nobody does. There are no sure things. There are no sure things in the NFL draft. None. The Carolina Panthers were so sure of Bryce Young a year ago that they gave up. I mean, we'll go over it coming up next with the Bears at the lottery in this thing. But what they gave up because they were sure. Well, now the situation he's in, how sure does that look? There is no such thing. When somebody comes out there and says, Michael Penix, this is a bust. They don't know, man. They don't know any more about Michael Penix or Drake May. It is impossible, truly, to try to project off of what somebody does in college, what they're absolutely going to be in the NFL. There's just no way. Trevor Lawrence was as sure a thing as can be. He's been a nice NFL quarterback, but he's not been transcendent. The only sure thing in the last 15 years was Andrew Luck. Everything else at quarterback is, God, you hope. You hope. I mean, Trubisky went ahead of Watson and Mahomes. Like, nobody knows, man. So, like, when you see Drake May or you see Jaden Daniels or Caleb Williams, it's all just hope. That's all it is. And you hope for the best. And that's what you tried to do last night. And I think that's what the Falcons are trying to do. We'll get into what the Bears did, what the Bengals did as well, all the quarterbacks. Marv, pretty nice spot living out in Scottsdale. That one held form. And I heard something from an NFL scout, an NFL front office guy yesterday about Jeremiah Smith that you're going to want to hear. We'll get to all of that. We're off and running on a very busy Friday edition, Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
The only radio station still operating with an active booze cart. I'm drunk right now. No, I'm not. Yes, I am. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Atlas Butler is built to keep you comfortable, and our plumbing services are no exception. You can rely on Atlas Butler for trusted, convenient plumbing and drain service. Our expert plumbers and drain specialists can take care of anything, from a broken water heater to a clogged drain. Call today, get it fixed today. That's our pledge to you.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Distilled sports discussion served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends, sponsored by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Fast, sustainable weight loss without medications. A solution for weight loss. Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Caleb Williams is as in good a position as a first-round number one pick quarterback has been in since whom? I'll wait. Andrew Luck? It's ridiculously good. I don't trust the coach, but beyond that, the weapons, the division, the talent around, it's a stunning thing. He's dropping into DJ Moore, Keenan Allen. They get Rome Odunze, who falls at number 9. He's there. The only thing that is of question, it goes back to something that it was just stupefying to me when they did it to begin with, that they kept Eberflus. Like, that's your time to reset the franchise. They don't. They stay with him. So now you'll have to trust him going forward. But my goodness, it's as good a situation as you're going to find yourself in. And here's what this ends up. By the way, it's not done yet. This is how this ends up. This has the potential. It has a potential to be like the Herschel Walker deal. Here's the deal. The Carolina Panthers get Bryce Young, number one overall a year ago. In exchange, the Chicago Bears get DJ Moore, first-round draft pick last year, offensive tackle Darnell Wright, 2023 second-round pick Tyreek Stevenson, the corner, Caleb Williams, and a 2025 second still to be harvested for Bryce Young. You wouldn't trade Bryce Young for Caleb Williams right now, let alone the rest of it. A top-flight number one receiver in DJ Moore. It's a stunning haul. And you made the comment about, Reese, you made the comment about owners. This is what happens. This is what happens when owners get enamored, because everything that I believe it to be true in Carolina, the people that were the football people in Carolina, not to suggest CJ would have been in a better spot. It would have been a bad spot for him too. But the football people, Josh McCown, who was on that staff at that time, they loved CJ Stroud. Loved him. But David Tepper wanted Bryce Young because Bryce Young was a star in the South.
Just real quick about Stroud last night. He was on like the Bleacher Report feed, and I found myself gravitating towards that. He was on with like the NBA guy, like Adam Lefko is the host. Mm-hmm. Stroud was really good. Like when he's when his NFL career is over, and that's going to be in a long time, like he was more entertaining, I thought, Stroud was, from a current player perspective, than Bill was on McAfee's thing.
All right, hold, table that. Remind me to get back to that. Go ahead, Chops.
Yeah, you're right about the difference in the trades and what they got there. And Tepper feels like he's a bit of a problem down in Carolina. Remember, he was throwing drinks on people from his luxury box earlier this year, and then he goes through that. And then you end up in this situation, too, with Carolina, where you go against what the football guys want and get your quarterback, and then you fire the coach because it's not working, but the coach didn't want that guy. And it doesn't work. Like, logically, you have to, like, side with one or the other, and I guess he went with the quarterback. But when you hire the coach first, you would think that you would hire him to say, well, this is what I want. This is the personnel I need. So, no, it's not working out in Carolina. And if I'm Justin Fields, I would also probably feel, like, a little bit sad that, like, how come they didn't do any of this for me? How come they weren't ever to put this together for me? And I had to play around with, you know, last year was a little bit better finally, but the first 2 years was just nothing around Fields.
He didn't get this because he is the Bryce Young in this conversation.
Yeah.
He's got drafted into the situation Bryce Young got drafted in, although not the first overall pick. He went to a bad spot. We knew it in the moment. I remember coming on here with threes and going anywhere but Chicago. Remember, we wanted him to San Francisco. We wanted him to any place else, just not Denver, just not Chicago. That was the one place. Don't be. It's just a quarterback graveyard. You can't go there. They have no weapons. There's no infrastructure, all of it. I will say this about, and this is when I finished the last segment talking about how nobody knows anything. I was so certain of Justin Fields at the next level that the way that it turned out for him probably clouded my enthusiasm for CJ, because I was not as chesty on CJ because I was gun shy because of how sure I was of Fields. Like, to me, Fields seemed like everything that you would want. Everything we saw here from Justin would lead you to believe that he could play at a very high level in the NFL. And I will stand by this. If he were drafted by San Francisco, if Shanahan had just stayed where he was and drafted him and not traded up to get Lance and all of that, had he just stayed there and he'd gone there, I do think Justin could have thrived there. I will say it with this caveat. This isn't even just one. This is, now we have actual proof. His former coordinator did not want him in Las Vegas, would rather have had Gardner Minshew. The Bears could get nothing for him. So that's truth pills that we all have to swallow on Justin, that there's something ain't happening there. And the consensus that I get anytime, this was at the combine, just had this conversation this week. Justin, for whatever reason, and I don't know if it happened in Chicago, or my hunch is it probably happened in Chicago, where, look, you can wreck a young quarterback with the circumstances, but he does not trust what he sees. And so because of that, he doesn't process well. And because of that, things are schemed open and he doesn't hit it. Now, he's such a significant athlete and has such incredible arm strength that he can still make a bunch of wow plays that deliver in the second half of games or at any point in the game. He can still make those wow plays, but on schedule, he doesn't succeed. And that's what led to him now being in a position where he's playing for his football career in Pittsburgh is that. But that's what, when I say nobody knows anything, that's the guy I was most sure of anybody. And so that caused me to like slow my roll on CJ just because, well, gosh, I was, the other thing that's really hard with all these Ohio State guys is the receiving talent is so immense that how many tight window throws do they have to make? I remember an NFL front office guy telling me that about Dwayne, that he doesn't have to make that many hard throws because of the amount of talent. So this is the most inexact science there is, quarterbacks and drafting them.
Well, you're talking about how nobody knows anything, and I think that's a big reason why it's not that like scouts are like wholly wrong or anything like that, but I think that they have to take a similar mantra to one of the things we say on this show. You have to say it with confidence, and if you say it with confidence, it has to be true. And I think they get into that mode because they have to convince higher ups that, yeah, oh, I, what I've seen, what I've studied, and you should take that into account, like, because they're also trying to say that I'm good at this. This is my job. You should take this guy. This guy's going to work out. This is why this guy is better than this guy. And then that's how they have to think this whole pre-draft process. So when they do talk to somebody in the media at The Athletic or whatever, and they give out their quotes and it gets attached anonymous, it's like, what are these guys thinking? Are they just throwing smoke screens? And it's, yeah, part of it is that. But I also think that there's a chance that they're kind of smoke screening themselves into thinking that this is the conclusion I came up with. I'm only me. This is the conclusion I came up with. I'm going to stamp my stamp of approval on it. But it doesn't mean that it's true in any way. It just means that it's that guy's opinion. They just speak like it's truth. And I think we need to step back sometimes and say, okay, that's that guy's opinion. That guy thinks Malik Nabers is better than Marvin Harrison Jr. But unless he's the Cardinals general manager, doesn't really matter.
No.
I just think that's, in, you know, why some situations like you see in Detroit where they've kind of got, it looks like a brain trust that are figuring things out from a talent evaluation and draft standpoint work. I mean, again, none of this is a perfect science. And what, it was five quarterbacks taken with the first 10 picks, like one. I mean, they're all going to be thrust into starting spots. Well,
except for Penix,
they're going to be thrust into starting spots. And like, what does success versus failure look like in year one? They're all going to be graded on different scales. And I also think, to your Fields point, you know, that body's still not, it's still warm.
Yeah, it's just tough.
There's time.
Yeah, it's really tough. And just, he's a top five favorite player for me ever here. And it's really hard to like admit, but when I get this overwhelming consensus from people in the NFL that it ain't there, that's, at some point you just have to say, okay, I guess it is what it is. I hope. If there's ever a place for him to succeed, you would think it would be Pittsburgh, that they would be supportive and that they would see. But he's going to have to compete with Russell Wilson right now.
Yeah, and sometimes you just have to accept more quarterbacks don't make it than do.
Yes, and somebody tweeted that. They said, you want to make money, bet against first-round quarterbacks. And they're right. It's really hard. It's very, very difficult to be able to do it. When they would go through, like, the amount of times, like the Commanders, for example, that franchise has drafted a first-round quarterback over the last 20 years, like how many times they've tried it, it's hard to land the plane on the quarterback position. A lot of the chatter leading up to this draft was around receiver. It was that Marvin Harrison was not the best receiver in this draft. Time will tell if he was or not, but he was the first one selected. It's a pretty good spot for the route man. In addition to that, if you think Marvin's spot at number 4 overall will never be challenged, I would say think again, because Jeremiah Smith already getting the attention of NFL front office executives. We'll get into that coming up next. Bishman Friends, right here on The Fan.
Your morning just got beefier. Morning Juice with Beamer, Bobby, and Shark.
Weekdays from 6 to 9.
The Fan, Ohio sports destiny.
Atlas Butler is built to keep you comfortable, and our plumbing services are no exception. You can rely on Atlas Butler for trusted, convenient plumbing and drain service. Our expert plumbers and drain specialists can take care of anything, from a broken water heater to a clogged drain. Call today, get it fixed today. That's our pledge to you.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Well, here's what's up on a Friday. Round one of the NFL draft in the books. Marvin Harrison Jr., number 4 overall. Highest drafted receiver in Buckeye history at that point. He goes to Arizona. This was the landing spot for him, you know, all along. You go back a year ago, you would. I remember even saying, like, at that time, we thought Arizona was going to be god-awful. And you said, Zona's going to pick 1 and 2 because they're going to... Whose pick did they have? They had Houston's. We said Houston was going to be awful.
They're going to pick 1 and 2. Being so good. Yeah.
Houston's pick ended up being, you know, down the list a little bit. But, yeah, they were going to go 1 and 2, and you're going to get Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison. Instead, they get Marvin at 4 overall. It's knowing what we know now, which I do think it's absolutely abundantly clear that Jim Harbaugh was not going receiver at number 5, that he was going offensive line. He did. Once, now that we know that, this is the best spot. Like, you'd rather be in Arizona than with the Giants. They're going to throw it with Kyler a lot. You get to live in the desert, which is a big win. for everybody. And so there's a lot of wins for Marv, and he was great. He's been the consummate pro since he's been here. He will be that for them as well. He seems like as sure a thing as there is in this draft. We talk about all the uncertainty at quarterback. To me, there's no uncertainty when it comes to Marv. He was available. Let's hear from him. Let's start with, let's go with looking forward to playing with Kyler.
I'm just going to try to help make his job easier, really. I'm going to go out there, make the contested catches, get open. I'm going to run fast and score a touchdown, help the team win. That's what I'm going to try to do on my end.
All right.
It's pretty straightforward. Yeah, a lot of Marvin's, he's pretty excited in a lot of these. A lot of these are pretty short. But the one I do think is interesting is when you're drafted with Arizona, of course, the first thing that's going to be said is, well, Larry Fitzgerald was here. How does he compare? Here's what Marv had to say about that.
Larry the legend. I mean, he really is a legend, man, to be able to play for as long as he did and be successful throughout that whole career. I'm definitely honored to be able to be, you know, have those comparisons. You know, I'm going to do my best to just be the best player that I can be and not worry about anything else. I'm going to have comparisons my whole life, going to compare it to my dad. You know, Larry's another great player now that I'd be compared to, but I'm just going to go out there and try to be the best player I can be.
Yeah, the fact that Marvin Harrison is your dad certainly is a part of it, and it weighed into the player that he is now, the way that he works, all of it. Here's Marv on what his pops taught him.
Just go out there, have fun. Have fun, play the game that you love to play. Now work hard each and every single day, and then when the game days come, you just have fun. You already put the work in. Just go out there and do what you've been trained to do.
I don't know if his dad ever looked like
he
was.
The boys. I tell the boys the same thing with their testing. Like, you've done the work.
Yeah.
Beamsy's in the middle of like, it's like 10 straight days of OST and iReady testing. I'm like, dude, you've studied. You're fine. He is so pissed off every day. Just stone-faced, grimacing, mad every day. Finally, yesterday, I said, look, dude, everybody has tough days. Don't bring it home. He looked at me like, he's 10. He goes, not please. Not please.
Well, you know, and the kid can't have a first Friday. What's a kid's first Friday?
No.
An hour of Fortnite or something? Is that
Fortnite and a pop?
Is that what he has to do? Yeah. It's funny that Marvin Harrison Jr. says that, because I don't know what was actually going through him, but I wouldn't say Marvin Harrison Sr. ever looked like somebody who was having all that much fun, like just from like facial expression, but maybe he was out there having fun. I'm sure playing with Peyton Manning all that time, if you're a wide receiver, is something that's fun to do. But yeah, this is where we always thought it. And going back to, we were talking about the scouts and everything, it's weird how the one, you know, this is me with the scarlet and gray colored glasses, but it like almost made me not like Malik Nabers over the last month because of all the stuff people were saying about them. But like, it just got to a point where it's like, okay, one, the stuff you're saying about Malik Nabers is sometimes ridiculous. There was one anonymous scout who compared him to Tyreek Hill and both the guys on San Francisco. Oh, Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk. Sure.
Plus Tyreek Hill.
Yes.
He's the greatest player ever.
And they were talking about like, oh, I don't know. We haven't seen this is a different person, but saying like they hadn't seen the top end speed. I don't know if Marvin Harrison can blow by people. It's like you can literally put together a supercut of just plays where Marvin Harrison for Ohio State runs right by people. So I'm glad that it held that way, you know, from a little Buckeye pride sense as well. But I also think Marvin Harrison ended up in a pretty good situation. It's not the best situation, but if Kyler Murray comes back, you know, I mean, he played at the end of last year as well, but if he comes back and they've got that figured out, I don't think he's in a terrible spot. Plus, he gets to play in the NFC, which is an easier route right now.
Plus, they're going to force it to him a lot.
Oh, yeah. He's the one right away. Yeah.
Regardless of if they're good or not, his stats will be there.
I do think that one of the things that happened is certain people, scouts, front office people, these anonymous people that a lot of these guys were talking about, who like Nabers over Harrison. Do you recall when that momentum started?
When Marvin Harrison didn't work out at the combine or pro day.
There was one where it was the absolute.
Oh, it was Malik Nabers pro day.
That's it.
Yes.
It was Malik Nabers pro day because they got to see him and he ran really fast. And when he was explosive coming in out of breaks, and I'm not to say Malik Nabers won't be great. He was a consensus All-American. He's a stud. It's a school that puts out a lot of great receivers. Right in line with what Ohio State has done. In fact, I mean, they got Chase and Jefferson. So for right now, they win. But at the same time, my God, that's when it was. It was he did the pro day. And I think there are people in the league who held Marvin's approach to the draft against him. Now, it didn't hurt him at all because he's still the first position player off the board. He is kind of a one-on-one of a guy who could probably do what he did. But I think people were turned off by it. And I don't think that... I think that's what led to a lot of the dialogue over the last month and a half on him, is that people were put off by the notion that this guy, I think their feeling was, well, he's too good to run. He's too good to test.
Or that he's going about it his own way. Well, this is the NFL. You don't get to do your own way. This is how you get into the NFL. So if Marvin Harrison works out and the you know, the Cardinals really like him, I wonder if that changes any other top guy's approach. You know, it usually takes a few years for people to say, like, oh, this is okay. But another thing that stood out to me in this draft was the, you know, we were talking about the selection of quarterbacks. And I wonder, is the NFL, like, covertly trying to say, hey, we want you to be a little bit older at quarterback now? We don't want to draft the 21-year-olds anymore, because that's how you end up with Trey Lance and Zach Wilson.
Well, I'm not ready there yet. I'm just trying to of the draft eligible guys.
It could just be a factor of the extra COVID year and guys having extra years, and those are just the players that are available. But it stood out to me.
I think the thing that really jumps out is Penix was at Indiana somebody who was undraftable, not an NFL prospect, and then turned into one at Washington. Nix was a guy at Auburn who was undraftable, not an NFL prospect, and turned into one at Oregon. And so I think, if anything, the NFL is now more open to the notion of, if a guy can be put in a position to succeed, let's see what they're capable of.
Yeah. Like,
those guys would not, had Nix played his career at Auburn and been done, he'd have been fifth, sixth round pick. Same thing with Penix. Like, you would have been way down. And the way you're treated as that versus a first rounder is night and day. And I think the way that you're treated by teams. So I think that is, I think that part is real, that there's a little bit more openness to, there's more to some of these prospects than meets the eye.
But I think one of the harder things for NFL franchises, scouts, all the people in the front office when they're evaluating these guys is, what is the, like, conversion rate of Michael Penix being this good at 24 or 23
sure.
at Washington versus this guy's 21 and he has all these tools and he's playing? And that's, again, it goes back to that. Nobody knows anything. We don't know which one to relate to, because who knows where that guy's going to be when he's 24.
This is the thing that I think they got to go to quarterback finishing school.
Yeah.
Had they stayed at Indiana or at Auburn, they would not have gotten because they had to play right away. Both of them played right away. So they didn't get to go to quarterback finishing school. I mean, Nix is 60 starts. Think about that. I mean, like, that's what Will Howard's going to do here. Will Howard is coming to Ohio State. He came to Ohio State to go to quarterback finishing school. Now, I'm not suggesting Will Howard's going to be a first round pick next year, but he has played the position. He's gotten a ton of at bats. And now he comes to finishing school.
Jaden Daniels was the same thing.
Jaden Daniels was the same thing.
If he left out of Arizona State, he wasn't getting drafted number two overall.
No. May and Williams took the more traditional approach. Big time prospect. Crazy thing about May is, and he alluded to this in the lead up to the draft, he articulated again how Alabama said, hey man, come home. We're ready. And he stuck it at North Carolina. So there's a lot of different ways to do it, but I think kind of that quarterback finishing school of let's have a little bit more patience is very, very real. It's a hell of a run for Hartline. I have to pay off on this tease. We will do it coming up next. The exact quote on Jeremiah Smith and how competitive his hometown school was at the end. We'll get to that coming up next. In the end for LeBron, clearly, Cavs as well. That was brutal.
Not talking about the Cavs.
Give me 10 seconds. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Unlike your deadbeat uncle, we'll never leave you stranded in a ditch when you were six. This promo may have been a touch too specific.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the Hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Our top men are working on everything except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
So, on the subject of Jeremiah Smith, the heralded freshman receiver at Ohio State, Marvin Harrison went fourth overall. Who the hell is going to know what's going to happen a couple of years from now in terms of quarterbacks? Because obviously that's something else. But I feel pretty confident saying that barring anything happening from a health perspective, he will be the first position player off the board in that draft. Talking to some people who would know, the University of Miami went at him as hard as you can go at a player to try to get him. And from the way I understand it, the financial bag that was offered to him by Miami far exceeded any other financial bag that was out there for Jeremiah Smith. And in the end, he did what was right for him. And what was right for him was to come to a wide receiver factory like Ohio State. The person I talked to, the name he used for Jeremiah Smith was Andre Johnson right now. So that's what's coming.
What about Calvin?
Either one.
Yeah, and probably work. Throw Tyreek Hill in there too. Why not? They're everything.
They're both. This isn't some clown on the internet though. Like this is, I'm telling you, like this. Yeah. So that's the type of dude he's going to be here. Barring, and that's why when you think about what they did through spring, when you think about what happened in the spring game, all of it, they know what they have. They know how special it was. You remember the press conference on signing day when Ryan Day got weak-kneed, the fact that it was official that he was coming to Ohio State because he's transcendent in that way. And the impact will be pretty immediate in terms of the type of player that he is right now. He's a grown man right now. So I thought that was a pretty cool little anecdote that I picked up yesterday during all of the NFL draft stuff. It's a factory that Heartline has here.
There was a picture yesterday from 2022, I guess it would have, or 2021, because these guys were there. It was on the bench, Marvin Harrison Jr., Chris Olave, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and Garrett Wilson, and standing in front of them, leaning down, talking to them on the sideline, CJ Stroud. And it's like all first round picks.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you think about, I mean, this is a topic for the summer, but we've talked about a lot. I mean, that's why the pressure is, I mean, it makes diamonds. We've never had pressure like this because you've had these absurdly talented quarterbacks and rosters for the last 4 or 5 years. You've had teams that are good enough to win it all, that are talented enough to win it all. You've failed to do so. And so now you have maybe your most talented team. It's time.
And you don't have
to live up to that.
You don't have accomplishments to lean back on over the last 2 years, really. Like, you know, 15 was so talented and it was disappointing, but you did just win 14's championship. And that's why made it a little easier.
This is like Coop, because you've got the 3 losses in a row to Michigan. So it is time. Like, that's what the mid to late 90s was like. It was all the talent in the world, but couldn't deliver in the game and couldn't win the ultimate prize. And the same thing, this is where you're at now. The NBA sucks. It just sucks sometimes. How quickly did the Cavs give up, Reese? By the time I got home from lacrosse, it was over. By the
end
time
of the
I got home.
End of the first quarter. So I think done. Orlando missed their first like 9 shots or something. Cavs led 10-3, and then Orlando did not miss a shot. And the Cavs missed all of them, and then they quit.
So was it just that? Okay, because when I got home, I was home by probably about 7:45 is when I got home.
The game had been dead, I think, about 15 minutes prior.
So it tipped at 7, right?
Mm-hmm. I thought it was 6:30.
Or was it 6:30? I wasn't watching, so I don't know if it was 6:30 or 7. But when I got there at 7:45, it was cooked. They were down 20. It was done. There was nothing. No read to watch. It was done. And that's one of those things that, like, you just push in the chips on a game 3. I guess, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this from the standpoint of, you got a game 4 and you win that when you're up 3-1 and it's fine. But it's like, if you're serious, like, Orlando is a young team, bury them.
Just choke them out. Yeah.
Just be done with it. Like, don't waste the days. If you're looking for an example of it from the other side, it's Denver. Denver's been down double digits in all 3 games to the Lakers and have won all 3 games.
All those comebacks have been in the third quarter as well.
They just run out of steam.
Yeah, the Lakers have actually outscored the Nuggets in the first, second, and fourth quarters in this series, but Denver has outscored them enough in those third quarters because they've actually been close games. Even though if you watch them and see the trends of how they're going, you can tell that Denver's a lot better than the Lakers, but the final score is close because the Lakers have built those leads and Denver just hasn't given up. And yeah, that's what happened to the Cavs. They got down 12 and were kind of just like, we'll just go down, take some mid-range jumpers, see what happens. And then the Magic just kept going. And yeah, you don't want to give life to a team, even though it still looks like the Cavs are the better team and I'm not worried officially yet. Giving life to a team on the road, if they win the next one, now it's 2-2 going back there, and you're actually in like a, you should win this one. You got to win this one now.
We talked about after game 1 and then game 2 of this series where Paolo Banchero just missed everything. Last night he did not. And so that's the difference for the Magic and the Cavs. If Orlando wants to keep this close, he's got to make all of his shots because he got a lot of open looks in games 1 and 2. He just couldn't knock anything down. And that had a ripple effect for the rest of the Magic. And then last night, the reverse of it happened. So it's so funny to see after a game 1 in any series, people go, well, don't overreact to one game. But then that feels ignored games 2, 3, 4, and 5.
I think it's
because Embiid had 50 last night.
Yeah. It's the look of it, though, right? I mean, you're down 61-45 at half.
They pulled the Mobley in the third quarter.
Yeah, it's 96-61 after three. Like, it's just pushing in the chips.
It's their worst playoff loss ever.
Yeah, it's just a clown show.
38 points? Yeah.
Nonsense. Conversely, the Lakers side of things, here's the deal for them. Like, if they had been anything other than the matchup against Denver, they might have won a round or two because LeBron's playing incredible. Anthony Davis is playing incredible. Now, D'Angelo Russell didn't do anything last night. In fact, literally did not score 0 points. That can't happen.
He also didn't get in the huddle with his teammates. Saw a lot of that going around.
Okay. Yeah.
Bad game one, good game two, bad game
body
three.
Language. Mm-hmm.
Not great. But you can't do more than what Davis and LeBron are doing. And it's not nearly enough. I mean, they just get overwhelmed in the second halves of all three of these games. And Denver's the best team in the league. Like, I don't know what the odds on them were. If they weren't the favorite going into the post, they had to be, right? It had to be them over probably Boston was, just because the East is easier. But whatever the odds were on Denver to start the postseason, like, they're the best team.
It was not seen, yeah, as like Oklahoma City took over as the true one seed. They just happened to get there record-wise down the stretch. And then the Denver, I think it's tougher, they definitely match up just so well against the Lakers. And hey, you know, Lakers, this is your lesson that, no, the regular season does matter. You actually do want higher seeding. So yes. Not only just the home court advantage, but so that you don't get matched up against Denver, the reigning champions.
They would have been better off just being the 8.
Right.
Yeah.
But you can't with Los Angeles because your players are old and you've got to, I mean, you got to play that game of we can't play all, you know, you can't play 65 of 82 with this roster because your players, you just got to manage those minutes. Right now, according to our friends at Tipico Sportsbook, Celtics plus 125, Nuggets plus 220, and the next best odds are plus 1700.
Yeah. So it is a two-man race right now.
But it's like we said at the beginning of this, if Boston doesn't win the East, then there's something wrong with the Celtics.
Well, they might not win this series against Miami.
Who wins the East if Boston doesn't?
Then it's
anybody's. I'm going to overreact the Sixers.
Then it'll be Sweep City from whoever gets to play Denver is what it'll be on that side of things. NFL Draft Night 2 coming up tonight. The Browns finally on the clock. The Bengals back on the clock. They landed their big tackle in round 1. What will they look to do in round 2? We will get into that coming up next. Bishop and Friends are here on The Fan.
Question from a listener. Do you dopes ever get tired of talking about Ohio State? No. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
The Fan.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cash back in the industry with up to 5% cash back on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Producers, co-hosts, friends, some of those things are true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour here on a day two of the NFL Draft Friday edition of the program. Diana Rossini with this 20 minutes ago. Michael Penix Jr. did not take a top 30 visit to Flowery Branch. That's where the Falcons' headquarters are. The Falcons only attended a 45-minute workout and met with him at the combine. That's it. It's almost unheard of, she writes, for an NFL quarterback to be taken in the first round to not be on a team's top 30. In the end, Atlanta felt comfortable with the work that they did.
It's a gamble.
Biggest smoke screen ever.
It could blow up in their face, but it could also work really well. I'm not sure if it's something that, even if it does work, that I would say, oh, NFL teams should really start thinking that this is the route you should take to figuring out your quarterback situation. But it could work, and if it does, then it's worth it. Last year, we all spent time laughing at Dan Campbell because he took a running back and an off-ball linebacker in the draft. They made the NFC Championship game, and both those guys are starters.
Here's something on that, too. Like, I think it was, Reese, I think you brought this up in the first hour, and it's a solid point out of you in terms of making fun of the off-ball linebacker and the tight end. Reese, you made the point earlier in the program that I thought was very important when having, and I just wanted to elaborate on it a little bit. Everybody in the Lions brain trust rows in the same direction. So you can like them or not, but they have a type. There is a type of player that they want, that they're looking for, and they are not going to conform to the feelings of the groupthink around the National Football League that you can't draft this position here. It worked right now for them. They got contributors. They were in the NFC Championship game. They They've landed on their picks. And this is the thing I'll tell you about John Dorsey. He's not great when it comes to being a people person and working with others.
Buddy boy.
But buddy boy can scout it. He can scout it. And he can tell you that side of it. And they're benefiting from that tremendously. I saw this from John Cazzano last night. I think he's at the Oregonian. We talked about him a lot with the Pac-12 teams coming in last year. He was one of the guys on the front lines of that. Certainly he tweeted this last night. The Pac-12 put a college football team in the title game, had the number one pick, 6 of the top 15 players drafted, and couldn't get a media rights deal done. Wrap your head around that. One of the most stunning failures when you put it in that perspective, that they were going into. It's almost like if they could have just somehow been patient for 6 months, if they could have held together and been patient for 6 months, if you could have just said, Colorado, just hang tight. We're going to get our money. Because when you think about all of that, if you think about that first month Colorado had, when you think about Washington's season, what Oregon's bringing back, Caleb Williams, all of it, they could have, there's no reason they couldn't have got a media rights deal that would have been pretty good.
Yeah.
Would it have been $35 million? I think it would have been in the vicinity. There were people out there wanting 50. They weren't going to get that, but they could have got 35, 40, and that league could have stayed together.
No, and out of those things, I mean, the USC-UCLA thing was still already happening, so they kind of would have lost credit for the Caleb Williams stuff, but there's still two other quarterbacks that were drafted out of it. And then, you look at all the players that were drafted throughout it. The Pac-12, every time you read about the Pac-12 and kind of look back on this past football season, it's like, wow, it was their best season in a decade, and they let it all fall apart in the middle of it.
Yes.
Or right before it, kind of.
Yeah.
It's a panic.
It was.
What panicking results in.
Yeah. Yeah. They panicked, and they couldn't row in the same direction, and they had people fighting for themselves, and that's what leads to it.
One more thing I wanted to get to that I noticed about the draft. I don't know which broadcast you guys were watching the most, but ESPN, I think, has taken the feedback and does not do every single player has the most tragic backstory. Here's a vignette for you.
Yeah, that's true.
Those were not very present last night, at all.
I watched the one Kuiper was on. I'm guessing that was ESPN.
That's ESPN, and then the College Game Day guys are on ABC.
Okay, which one did you guys watch? Did you bounce around or did you stick?
I bounced around the two ESPN ones, started with Kuiper and those guys. They're a little bit more hard facts, NFL. The College Game Day guys, they're kind of fun to check out because they're sitting there having a little bit of fun. Saban was there, so it was kind of cool to hear from him on TV. It was Desmond, not Fowler, Reese Davis,
Reese.
Saban, and Kirk.
Okay.
Yeah, so I wanted Saban to see right up there. Saban's debut. I popped around, so I was on Bleacher Report. They had a stream with Marvin Harris, or no, with CJ Stroud. I wanted to check out Belichick on the McAfee show. They had some audio issues to start, and then I think they got a medium as well, is sitting there next to Belichick and trying to like predict picks that are going to happen. So that was a wacky variety show. So I was all over the place with it.
Well, that guy got the first 13 picks right, though. Oz the Mentalist. Not Dr. Sure. Oz. He's Oz the Mentalist. A different Oz.
That dude got 13 right?
That's what the internet was telling me today. I haven't gone back and listened to the video, but
it's on the internet. It must be right. All right, Reese, give me a review of the Belichick on McAfee, because if I would a year ago say, a year from now, Bill Belichick is going to be doing draft coverage with Pat McAfee online, you would have said nuts.
I'll say it was good. It was solid B+ from the standpoint of, if you like a guy that's you're watching film with him. He broke down things very well and in enough lay speak that anybody could parachute in.
Okay,
get that their fill. I mean, it's like a lot with the Reddick and LeBron podcast. You got to love that stuff to really be entertained by it. So it's good in small doses. But if that's not your thing, you can miss it.
And I would encourage, if anybody wants like a highlight of it, he told this Randy Moss story about when the Patriots acquired him. So I've seen that aggregated this morning. It's too long to play. It's like 3 minutes long, but it's about, he called Randy and Randy hung up on him because he didn't think it was actually Bill Belichick. And then when he got there, he's telling him, oh, you don't have to worry about that because I'm going to be able to run right by those guys. Like, so he can do the details better than me, but I would encourage somebody to find that. It was a fun little story time from Coach Belichick.
That's what you want out of him, and that's what you want out of him next year on Manningcast, are those anecdotes, because he so rarely shared them when he coached.
Right.
You know? So, like, whatever you get from him, you know, it's kind of like that spot Eddie Murphy's in from a comedic standpoint, that he doesn't done anything like stand-up in, like, 30 years, going on 40 years. And so anytime he does anything, he gets this huge applause because you just want anything from him. And that's what it's like with Belichick. Like the faucet was turned off for 25 years in terms of information. And now like he has this charismatic way of telling stories and he's got a photographic memory. Obviously he remembers every single detail. And he can be great at this. The question is, you know, does he want to be? How was Saban on game day? How did that work?
I thought he was decent. I think I didn't watch any long form, but I thought what I saw from Belichick was probably a bit better. But I think Saban, I think both those guys have that air about them that we hear this from people who know them interpersonally, that like, no, they're actually pretty jovial and they like you said, good storytellers and they remember everything. And I got a similar sense from Saban. If he does more stuff with them throughout the season, whatever his role is going to be, I think he's going to be good.
Too smart not to be. A couple of things at the bottom of the draft you couldn't help but notice. If you're the Bills, why would you allow for Kansas City to trade up and draft the fastest player in the draft? Like the Bills, aren't you competing for the same thing? Don't you need wide receivers? Like of all the teams to trade with, Kansas City? So they get Xavier Worthy, and here's the deal with Kansas City. They're just going to keep drafting fast guys to try to replicate Tyreek Hill, and you can say, oh my gosh, what's the name of the guy that they bailed on that the fantasy people love every year? And now they're 2 years into it, and it didn't work. Small school guy 2 years ago in the draft. I'm blanking on it.
Nicole Hardman?
No. It was 2 years ago. Well, we'll get to it. It'll come to my mind.
Sky Moore.
It was like, oh, Sky Moore, steal of the draft. Well, 2 years with it, it didn't work. But how much didn't it work? They still won the Super Bowl both years. So now they get to take another swing at a weapon in Xavier Worthy. And if you're the Bills, you're the direct competitor and you give them the ability to do it.
And the Chiefs have this great like cheat code that not everybody can access because Mahomes is so good that they can do the inverse of what is what teams are trying to do, get the quarterback on a rookie deal and you can pay everybody around him. Okay, we're going to pay Mahomes, even though he's not the top of the market right now. Eventually probably will reset the market originally. But then they say Mahomes is so good, we can just keep putting rookie deals around him. And that's how we'll make the money work.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're going to do. Matt, with this was funny. I meant to bring this up and thank you for reminding us. Favorite hyperbolic moment of the night, Booger talking about the neighbor's pick, saying he's basically a cross between Ja'Marr Chase and Tyreek Hill.
Oh, a cross between those guys.
It's both. Let's take the two most explosive receivers in the league, and he's kind of a mix of both of them.
Like you can just say he's fast, guys.
Yeah, he's
like
really
we know
fast.
What that means.
This one from Woofter 13, thoughts on the Atlanta taking Penix, possible trade assets, follow me. Big prospect, sit him, wait for an injury this season, preseason, pounce on a first round pick for next season. Thoughts. I would say that would be more the veteran play. Right. I think their thoughts on it are Jordan Love, that they're going to wait and give him 2 years to sit behind Cousins and see what he can be.
That's do not forget that 4 year deal for Cousins is not really 4 years.
It's two. Yeah. The thing too, in terms of the Buckeyes, we obviously talked a lot about Marv in the first segment, but last night, and I do think to an even greater extent tonight is a reminder of who didn't go because if Emeka, Denzel, JT, Jack, if all of them had
Travion,
if those guys all would have gone, it would have been, for some of them, it would have been the end of the night last night, but many of them would have been tonight. I mean, almost everybody I just mentioned would have been picked in the second or third round tonight if they got past the first. Denzel was a borderline one. JT was a borderline one. Emeka was a borderline one. And the rest of those guys are twos and threes at worst. So there would have been a list of Buckeyes in this draft last night, but they weren't, which is good news for all of you and all of us, because that means they're going to play here next season. In terms of most likely drafted, I would think Mike would be the first one off.
That's, the conventional wisdom.
He could be second round. I would not be surprised if it was Browns at 54, if he gets there. I think that would be a position that they would certainly be looking for at that point. Maybe Cade tonight as well, and then after that, it's probably going to be Saturday.
The rest of these guys are mostly day three and a few of them at the end, you know, just based on, you know, the mock drafts and kind of cultivating those and aggregating them all together. It looks like, like guys like Tommy Eichenberg, Steel Chambers, the two linebackers. Proctor had a really great year, but, you know, he was a little bit disappointing throughout that. So I think that affects him. And then when you get into like Xavier Johnson and Matt Jones on the line and Mayan Williams, I think those are kind of guys that maybe seventh round, but most likely undrafted free agent.
I could see Tommy in the fourth.
Yeah. Tommy's good, but he's a middle linebacker. It's just not a very valued position.
You just don't take him high. So it'll be, you know, it'll be middle rounds of the draft. And Mike would be the guy that I would watch certainly first tonight. And how far does that go? The one thing that you're going to be paying attention to, though, is there a run on guys? So at the end of the first round last night, there was a run on receivers. What will happen at the top of the second round? And then how does that affect what the Browns and Bengals look to do? Both of them need to hit on some guys here in terms of long-term roster building. The Bengals did hit on their offensive lineman, Amarius Mims from Georgia. We will get into that. The two Ohio teams, where they stand and what they need to do tonight and hope to do tonight. Coming up next, Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
This promo is brought to you by Common Man and Timmy Hall's Ping Pong Game. The Fan.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the Hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The uncle you never knew you had. The friends you kind of wish you didn't. This is Bishop and Friends.
Well, fellas, remember that first time you failed to perform in the bedroom? Maybe you laughed it off. No big deal. Then it happened a second time, a third time, maybe more. Now it's a problem. Very likely it's affecting your relationship with the one you love. And here's the deal. Erectile dysfunction is a relationship destroyer. It can contribute to depression, distancing, conflicts, even breakups and divorce. What's so disturbing about this is most men who suffer from ED can be successfully treated, but many will not seek the treatment that they should. And I'm telling you, you should, and I'm telling you where to go. My friends at Tri-State Men's Health, give them a call today. So many of you suffer mediocre sex life, just good enough. Their treatments work while the pills and herbals fail. Tri-State Men's Health is my guys. They are going to take care of you. Do yourself a favor. Schedule a consult with Tri-State Men's Health here in town today. Your initial visit is $99. It includes a medical consult with a licensed medical provider, a TNPSA test, and if medically advised, a test dose. If that test dose doesn't work, that office visit's going to be free. It's a no-lose win-win for you. Give them a call today. Get your sex life back on track. 800-900-9654 or visit tristatemenshealth.com for more. Seems like one of the worst kept secrets, and appropriately, was the fact that the Bengals were going to get some offensive line help. They did. Amarius Mims, 6'8", 340 out of Georgia. Monster of a man coming into play. Some tackle for them. Much like the Browns, there weren't any like traditional, like come in, start right away things. But you do love the positional pick. I'm not Joe Thomas. I'm not going to sit here and tell you if I love this guy. Who knows? I have no clue.
Well, nobody knows. He only started 8 games at Georgia. Yeah. He really hasn't played all that much. But
yeah.
They've got they've got both Browns right now, Orlando and Trent.
Sure.
Kind of holding it up. So it's almost the quarterback version of the Rodgers love thing. Bring him in so he can learn for a year or two, and then he can actually take over.
And here's the deal. You play 17 games. Last year, the Browns were playing their 5th and 6th tackles.
That's true.
By the time you get into it. So it's future planning. It is learn behind and get better, get behind two big time pros and get better. So you like the pick from that perspective for them. The Bengals are in the situation that the Browns are in where you just can't pay everybody. You're not. And so you're going to have to be able to hit on these picks going forward. And you're right that we were talking about Kansas City. They have the cheat code in Mahomes. And because of that, they've been able to win 2 Super Bowls while going from a Tyreek Hill based offense along with Kelsey to Kelsey and a bunch of fill in the blank guys and an emphasis on defense. That's where the Bengals are going to be. That's where the Browns are going to be. So it is critical that you hit on these second and third round picks for both of these franchises going forward. The Bengals will pick in round 2. They will pick at 49 overall. Then the third round, they'll pick at 80 and at 97. The Browns with 2 picks tonight at 54 and at 85. I think both of them are in the position of best available. They have great rosters. Sure. In Cincinnati, would you like to land on a receiver at 49 that eventually could take the place of Boyd or Higgins? Yeah, for sure. But you don't want to force it. If something great falls in your lap, I think both of those rosters and both those operations are in a point where you just take full advantage of it. As for the Browns thinking tonight, defensive tackle is probably the only one that would have a chance to come in and play. right away and make some sort of impact. But that room's pretty full. Off-ball linebacker potentially. Remember, Anthony Walker is no longer there. So off-ball linebacker potentially in the third round would make sense. In the second round at 54, I think you're looking defensive tackle, weapon, so receiver, something like that. I would not be surprised in the second or third round if, let's say, for example, I don't even know who the number one running back in this draft is, but let's say he were to fall. Is it the kid out of Texas?
Jonathan Brooks, yeah.
Brooks.
So Blake Corum?
Maybe.
Yeah, no running back selected in the first round. I'm looking at it from, I thought I was looking at the positional ones, but it was the draft makeup of it. And I clicked on the positions running back. Nope, no selections made.
So Brooks is number one. He's on ESPN. He's 42nd overall. You know, that's a situation where, like, maybe not at 54, but if one of these guys is available in that third round, that would be a spot for them. You know, I think the guy they'd love to have, I just don't know that there's any scenario where he gets there, because I think there's going to be a run on quarterbacks, but like Ladd McConkie would be a home run.
I was just thinking that.
He'd be a home run.
He's not going to be there at 54, but.
No.
I think the trickiest thing now for the Browns and Bengals, and we're a few years into this for both of these squads and the Browns especially, but you were talking about like the idea of like peddling hope, and that's like the beauty of the draft for all these fans, especially at the top of the draft somewhere. The Browns have seen themselves a lot over the years, but now it's the idea of like peddling patience when your roster is like this, that like the people you're drafting, no, these aren't supposed to be guys that come in and we're going to plug in and they're going to be our starters. These are, you know, some of them might find their way into that position, but that's not exactly what they're looking for. And as like as an organization, you can't like say that out loud, but how do you get your fan base to accept the way your draft is going because of how good the rosters are already?
Yeah. And it's, you know, this was the last year of it for the Browns where they won't have a first round pick. They're done paying the penance on the Deshaun Watson deal. And so next year they'll have a first round pick. But this is a critical juncture for them because both of these teams are in win now mode, win it all now mode. The Bengals, the only thing holding them back is the health of Joe Burrow. If he's healthy, then they're good. They're ready to go. The only thing holding back the Browns is the competency of Deshaun Watson. If he's competent, then they're ready to go. You saw what they did last year. But at the same time, you are drafting for an ability as an organization to be able to, when it comes time to move off of some of your veterans. For example, even if he comes back, whatever Nick Chubb is next year, how long is he? He's not going to be what he was.
No.
Like there's no chance. He's not going to be what he is. It two catastrophic surgeries in one hit. So as sad as that is to say, he is not going to be the player that he was previously. That much is known. The Bengals are in the last year of T. Higgins. That's done. Hendrickson requested a trade. Probably his last year there too. So they can play out. Both these teams can play out this string and play out this season. How long is Amari Cooper for Cleveland? He's getting a little long in the tooth. They have to start future planning at those spots. How long can you play two guards the way they're paying two guards in Cleveland with Teller and Betonio? You can't. So you have to hit. The other thing for Cleveland is, remember, they had Bill Callahan, who was basically a get-out-of-jail-free card on the offensive line. He could take a pound of clay and mold it, right? He's gone. He's in Tennessee now. So they need depth. They need players who a year from now can be in the starting lineup. That's how critical it is for them. Same thing with Cincinnati. They have to future plan for Higgins ain't going to be here next year, and we're unwilling to trade him to get anything back for him. So we need somebody who can step in and play opposite Ja'Marr Chase next season.
When you're talking about the Browns and needing those players to step in, I'm thinking like to the first round is kind of a little bit, because sometimes you're reaching, you're looking for that next star for your team, a little bit boom or bust, and you hope that, yes, you might not get the A-plus player by getting there, but like, can they get it down to, from a scouting standpoint and who they're picking, like a floor way where you're like, at least we know that this guy is going to be a B for us.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, because you take those risks in the first round and you might end up with a D player, and that's not good enough, and that ends up being a wasted pick. So you still can't waste the picks, but it's not as high of a grading expectation for you for this guy to actually be the right pick for you in the second or third round.
Some things just to watch out for, Bo, when you have conversations with NBC about rounds 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Michigan's had a really great offensive line the past two seasons in college football, and there are a lot of guys on that line, some in the interior. Like, Zinter comes to mind if he's available. The Browns, it could be a, if you can get him, you know, with a fourth-round pick, so that'd be on Saturday, that'd be wonderful, but, like, he's projected in the 120s. It's like, those would be the guys you're talking about, and it's like, it doesn't matter where he played at. If he's a guy that can develop this year, can be something that you can rest your laurels on next season in the NFL.
Reese would turn it into a draft Michigan players guy.
Hell of a zag.
I'd be a draft Ohio State players guy, but all of them came back.
Right.
Here's the both
except
of
Michael
these...
Hall. Pick Michael Hall if he's there at 54, you idiots.
Both of these teams have done a tremendous job in second, third, fourth rounds. Their track record is really good. You think about Delpit, JOK, Dwan Jones for the Browns, it's just off the top of my head. Logan Wilson, T. Higgins, like, for the Cincinnati Bengals, like, they've hit. You want to be bad about 500 here, right? Second round, you better hit more like 80%. But third, fourth, fifth round, you want to hit on half of these guys. And they're doing that at a much greater clip than even half. I'll get Tim May's perspective on what he saw from night one in the NFL draft and the closing of the portal early next week. Bishop and friends right here on The Fan.
The two most mature people working at the radio station. And that's just because they wear pants.
The pervert and the skibbies.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays at noon.
The Fan.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The best hair on the air.
You are listening to Bishop and Friends.
NFL draft day two tonight. Perhaps a Buckeye off the board. My call would seem to be the most likely. Potentially Cade Stover in the second or third as well. It's all in the eye of the beholder, as we know so, so very well. Time to head out on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Conversation with good buddy Tim May. The Tim May Show right here at The Fan and on Letterman Row. All right, let's do this first. Day one of the draft is in the books. As you look back on your time covering Ohio State, and of course we get attached to many of these guys, who is a guy you were most right about that the league got wrong from the Ohio State perspective, and who is the guy you were most wrong about from the Ohio State perspective? In other words, you thought he would be great, and it didn't work.
You should have given me time to do research, and I'm just messing with you. Vernon Golston, I thought, was going to be better than he ended up being. And, you know, the defensive end who had the chest bump sack in the Michigan game, had a tremendous last year at Ohio State, goes to the Jets and never panned out. And I don't know, man. I was on the stump last year. I mean, I know it's only one spot, but I was on the stump last year that C.J. Stroud was the best quarterback in the draft. I like Bryce Young for all kinds of reasons, except C.J. Stroud was a bigger, stronger, taller version, you know, of that kind of player. And a lot of people thought I was just whatever. I like the way C.J. Stroud plays. And so that would be the most, that would be a recent one, but that was the difference between one and two, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
I mean, you know, there's been a lot of guys, let's put it that way, that have been maybe not as good as you thought they would, because, you know, you're taking another step up. But I thought Andy Katzenmoyer, if he hadn't gotten hurt, Andy Katzenmoyer was going to be a superstar in the NFL, but he got hurt and that was that. So, you know, it's kind of like all kinds of ways you got to look at it, right?
It is. Yeah. I mean, the one I struggle with is Fields, because he just seemed like every box checked, you know, and it's something that
he's not done yet though. See, he's shown enough for me with a really crappy, I almost said a bad word there, with a really crappy, with a really crappy team. He's shown enough for me that there's something there. If he has an offensive line that where he every other play he's either not having to scramble or he can stand there for another half second right on down the line. It's still open for me because I've seen that guy play brilliantly. And I remember 2 years ago he just said, "The heck with this losing stuff. I'm just going to run," because, you know, they were so bad, the Bears.
And, yeah, I think bad habits developed there.
He has that quality about him. Exactly. I call it the Tim Couch effect, you know, where you're just playing with a, with a, with a I keep almost saying bad words.
But well, that's because you're really are you golfing? Are you trying to play golf? Who you go? Are you with Moose?
I was actually in my backswing when you called when y'all called the first time. I told Eric and I hit a ball about 40, 50 yards dead right.
Are you with Moose?
Yeah, Moose is tearing it up right now.
Of course he is. He's got the best short game in the history of the world, so that's not a surprise. Mm-hmm. That's what he does. Exactly. But I need you locked in here. I mean, you got to lock in here a little bit, Matt.
No,
you know.
I'm not. I'm like I am. I'm officially locked out at this point.
Go ahead, though. What did you make of last night? Do you love the draft?
Yeah, like I like the draft because it was a unique draft with 14 straight offensive guys going. I thought that was pretty remarkable. You know, get it while you can. But number two, you and I've talked about this. Remember, we used to talk about this in the halls at 97.1 The Fan or Channel 10. Offense is what it's about, man. If you score points, it makes your defense a lot better. I've said that a million times, so make that 1,000,003 or something. But everybody's looking for that quarterback that's going to save them. You know, of six taken, what was it? Was it six taken, I think, in the first round?
Six in the first 12 picks, Tim.
First 12 picks. Three are definitely going to probably not work out. I don't know which three of those are right now because, for example, no matter what you think of Michigan, J.J. McCarthy seemed to deliver the ball at the right spot at the right time when they needed him the last 3 years, especially this past season, which was remarkable for him despite all the other junk that was going on. But he has a knack for making the play in the clutch, and that can't be taught, in my opinion. I like him. I like him more than I like Drake May. I know it goes against both common opinion and also the fact he added an E to his name, or he and I'd probably be cousins. I like it when you said the poor May boys, because that's what my mom used to call me and my three brothers, the poor May boys.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm not a Caleb Williams guy. I like Jaden Daniels. I voted for him. I voted for Michael Penix Jr. for the Heisman Trophy. You know how much I like about him, because I think he uplifted that program at Washington with his play, his guts, and really his clutch play, his clutch passing. So it's just a remarkable draft when you think about it. When you think one or two of these guys are definitely going to be bust, but who are they going to be? Because Penix, you just sitting there and you know, something happens where it's incredulous. And the incredulous thing was the Atlanta Falcons getting Kirk Cousins and signing him to a big, huge contract and then drafting Michael Penix Jr. with their first pick. Something's got to give there, that's for sure.
Seems like what their attitude was. Yeah, I was talking to some people down there, and it seems like their attitude is we're just going to keep drafting one until we hit one. And they really only – they have Cousins for 2 years, so I think they're thinking of it more like the Jordan Love approach, right? Like let's have him watch Cousins, who's a consummate professional, for 2 years. Yeah. Remember, Cousins playing in that offense, they're going to run the McVay offense, so that is a turn your back to the defense, spin, one read, throw it right where we're telling you to. So that's something that if Penix can learn under – Cousins, there's some future planning there that makes a little bit of sense. And I think that makes sense to your McCarthy comment. I actually think JJ, if Caleb Williams is probably in the best spot because of all of the talent around him. But JJ might even be in a better spot because O'Connell's offense is going to be the same one that they run with the 49ers with Purdy. And he's got Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. Like if he's got something to him, that's the best spot maybe in the league.
Yeah, here's the thing. You've got to deliver the ball. You know, we make it too complicated. I mean, you know, I heard somebody the other day. I was talking with somebody the other day, and I butted into the conversation of the guys next to me because they were talking about how Terry Bradshaw was overrated and blah blah. I go, did you watch Terry Bradshaw? These are guys who never saw Terry Bradshaw play, at least live. You know, not that that matters, but I'm just going. The guy won 4 Super Bowls. Number one, number two, he delivered clutch passes when they were needed in that run dominated Steeler offense. You know, nobody hit the dig route better than Terry Bradshaw did back in the day. And I'm just going, you know, just because he doesn't hit you upside the head IQ-wise, you think he's a dummy, which I don't think he's a dummy at all. He's made a fortune, you know. But quarterbacks are hard to read based on when you're talking to them or getting some kind of impression about them being smart or not, just based on, you know, how they relate to you. You know what I mean? Some guys can just flat do it, and otherwise they're just kind of dummies. But I mean,
well, that's what got CJ last year was that test nonsense.
Yep. But I like Michael Penix Jr. just because Michael Penix Jr. can deliver a very accurate ball in all kinds of ways, you know, and just like J.J. McCarthy was accurate when he needed to be at Michigan, which was very few times. I mean, you run the ball 32 times in the second half against Penn State. You're not leaning on your quarterback, right? But but I think he showed out in the pre-draft stuff of what he's about throwing the ball, because that's the bottom line. You don't get taken in the first round unless you've proven to somebody you're pretty good at flinging it.
I was talking to somebody yesterday. I want to run this by you. I'll get you out of here on this one so you get back to your golf game with Moose. Compare Jeremiah Smith to Andre Johnson. He said, I'm not kidding. Right now, he's Andre Johnson. What do you make of that?
Well, I think physically he's going to be very close to Andre Johnson, but there's a finesse to him that I didn't see in Andre Johnson. I mean, and I'm just talking about, we're talking about nuance here, right? We're talking about, 2% here or whatever. I just like the way Jeremiah Smith, there's a guy on the tee right now, so he's, I'm doing Jim Nance impression. I just like the way Jeremiah carries himself, handles himself, runs routes. He's got a power element to him, but the thing I like about him is what you saw very first time you ever watched Chris Carter catch 5 passes in a row, was he puts himself between the defender and the ball as it's incoming, you know, or he can get up over. And that to me is like, you know, that's why I like Marvin Harrison Jr. You know, I've described him on your show. He's an artist along with being checking all the other boxes. He's a freaking artist. And you don't see a lot of artists come along, and other people are picking up on that line now. That's okay with me, but I've been calling that. I even told him middle of the season. I said, I just want to let you know, I noticed this about you. He really thanked me and stuff, because he knows what he knows he is. Diva's not the right word, but he's pretty close to that in the sense of just let this man sing. You know what I mean?
Try and stay. Get out of here. Listen to me. Try to stay within 5 shots of Moose, and then you'll be good.
Yeah, that's my quest, as Don Quixote would say. That's my quest, but I'm swinging like a windmill instead of at windmills.
All right. Tim May, show Letterman Row right here at The Fan. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Bo, you know it's always a pleasure, brother.
Good Lord. Thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here at The Fan.
If you consider yourself a Buckeye fan, you've come to the right place. This is your Heritage Sports Talker and home of Ohio State Athletics, The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each 3-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cash back in the industry with up to 5% cash back on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Bo knows many people. He talks to the interesting ones on this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Apex Plumbing Pros.
I wasn't sure how much interest you'd have in this one, so I had it as my third one. But you said something in the break that made me say, okay, let's lead off with it. This from Adam Schefter before the draft yesterday. Marvin Harrison Jr. has yet to sign a preliminary NFLPA licensing agreement that all draftees typically sign, which would allow his name and likeness to be monetized after he is picked and before his NFL contract is signed, per sources. His jersey will not be available for purchase, and he will not be featured in video games until his NFLPA group licensing deal is signed. I saw some other places that I didn't trust as much as Schefter that said he can technically not sign the NFLPA and hold on to his name, image, and likeness and come up with deals with EA or sell his own merchandise. So that's technically available, but thing or not a thing.
Well, big thing, because I was curious about it in the break. I'm like, I wonder what number he's going to wear with Arizona. Like, let me get on their site and see what's going to happen. Okay, so like this has happened before on the video game front. Like, I remember Charles Barkley wasn't in the NBA Live video games way, way back. And I think Jordan wasn't in one of them for a while. So there are some examples, but it's usually like Apex players. Like, Marv, I love you. Just sign the damn thing.
It's like, just everybody a part does of it.
It's a part of it. Like, your marketing's not going to be any different.
What are you going to do? Make red jerseys and sell them with your name on it?
Come on, stop it. Like, just Don't do that stuff. My advice would be be done with this.
I wouldn't want to get into business with Fanatics either. I don't blame him. Hold out. See, I don't know why. I've never heard of this being
a thing. So silly.
So, this is a thing for me because I was just under the impression that once you signed I guess you'd have to sign something, right?
If you're not a member of the NFLPA, you're under no protection from them.
It's like, what's your contract? Is your contract at all different? I mean, when he signs his rookie deal, which could be in a week, in a day, in a month. But
yeah, don't be difficult.
Can you imagine Marvin Harrison Sr. being one of those guys outside an NFL stadium selling unlicensed gear at a table?
He's the fourth pick in the draft. Like, you're good.
Peddling you're good. Reebok
you got
jerseys.
A New Balance deal. Like, come on.
Red Reebok Harrison jerseys. Those will sell like hotcakes. Schefter also had a report that Caleb Williams broke the Fanatics record for draft night merchandise sales for any draft pick in any sport, beating the previous record set last week by Caitlin Clark. They're not a thing.
Clark on that list, yeah.
Because I remember Justin did that too. The Bears are a monster organization with a monster fan base, so it's not too surprising to me that he would have. I knew he would sell a lot, but I think that's a thing that he broke. That it's the most ever, because there was some sort of like trepidation of like, are we sure he's a fit there? Personality wise, does it work? All of those things. He's going to wear 18, which is interesting. So he's wearing 18 when he's with the Bears. But that's the thing. It's surprising to me. Surprising thing at the very least.
I wonder if when your team is so locked in at number one, so you have that. You're right. There was some idea of like, they don't have to take him number one. They could maybe even trade it. But once we got to like a month within the draft, at the very least, and post combine, that kind of stuff, it was pretty certain that they were going with him. So maybe that anticipation of not just we're going to get a quarterback, but we know who it is, helps build that for the fans. And they are ready to buy the jersey right away. Plus, as we mentioned off the top of the show, with all the weapons, you're actually excited about a quarterback prospect for once in Chicago. So hopefully it works out, or else you guys are going to have a bunch of 18 Williams jerseys in a few years that aren't going to be worth much to you. On the Come Get Some podcast with Greg and Blake Williams, Greg had a story from the 2017 draft.
Up until, 2 hours before the draft, okay, we're still in arguments going on there in the draft room, okay, about whether it's Miles or Mitch Trubisky. And finally, I'm going to say 2.5 hours before, they're looking like they're going to settle on Mitch Trubisky. And so right at the 2 hour mark, I said, hey, fellas, I understand that. We've talked this whole thing through. I just want to let everybody in here know I'm going to have a press conference after this and let them know about the conversations going on here about not taking Myles Garrett. It's amazing how we decided all of a sudden to take Myles Garrett. Okay, in that situation and how it's proved out to be since then.
Thing or not a thing?
No one is more retroactively correct than Greg Williams.
Maybe Bill Polian.
Yeah. The other thing I would say about this is that I'm sure that he's also really good at like taking a kernel of truth and then amplifying it, right? And making it seem. Do I think this happened? A defensive coordinator in a draft room in 2017. He was not the head coach. Like, Hugh Jackson was the head coach, had a lot of organizational power at that time. Sashi Brown was the general manager at that time. Paul DePodesta was still in overseeing kind of all of it. Haslam's in ownership. Do I think that he stood up and said, I'm going to have a press conference if we don't take Myles Garrett number one? No, I do not.
Where are you going to have it, sir? Because if you want to, it's not going to be in our building.
No, I would be shocked if that was the real truth on it. I'm sure that I'm sure the kernel of the truth is correct. He was lobbying for Miles. I'm sure that was correct. I'm certain it was. I also am not sure if it was between Trubisky and Miles. I'll have to double check on that. But I'm sure that there's a kernel of truth to this, but I don't think that's the whole truth.
Well, yeah, I'm sure he advocated, and I'm sure he did so with colorful Greg Triple G Williams language. But for him to say, oh, I'm going to hold a press conference, and they're like, oh, no, don't do that, fine, we'll acquiesce, is as much of a stretch as I think one can have.
Well, and doing the podcast with like his son, like it was just softballed to him. But his son called him Trubinsky twice. And I was like, I don't even think he cares about this question. I think Greg told him to ask it.
Also, I just learned that Greg Williams has a podcast.
Come get some.
Come get some, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to skip on that. After Joel Embiid dropped 50 on the Knicks last night in the Sixers Game 3 win, he shared that he did so while dealing with a bout of Bell's palsy. which is a condition that has affected the left side of his face. So Johns Hopkins defines Bell's palsy as an unexplained episode of facial muscle weakness or paralysis. It begins suddenly and worsens over 48 hours. The condition results from damage to the facial nerve. And Bede told reporters it started a day or two before the Miami play-in game, and he had migraines and didn't think it was anything. Then the condition worsened. It has affected his vision at times, causing it to be blurry. Jeez. Said he constantly must put in eye drops to keep the eye from getting too dry. Adding, quote, "I just hope that I could stay like this." He was pointing to his face as it was last night. "I've got a beautiful face. I don't like it when my mouth is looking the other way." End quote. Thing or not a thing?
Huge thing. That's a lot going on, man. So he's got the lower body stuff and that, and he dropped 50 in a must-win game three. Yeah, it's a huge thing. That's incredible.
Research, is that considered like a temporary thing? Like, is it supposed to go away, or is it like something to deal with?
Weeks or months is...
It can be temporary, and it can be permanent.
Like, so it can't be like a chronic thing? But it has like flare-ups? Is that kind of what it is? I'm not really familiar with this. But yeah, it sounds like it'd be bad. So if he can get into a good position, he hit... I think he hit three threes was like the most he had ever done in a playoff game last night on the way to that 50 pointer. But he also had 19 made free throws. He was like 19 of 21 from the line. He had some sort of record where it was the least amount of shots since whoever to get a 50 point game in NBA. Like, it was just one of those nights where like all these little stats come up. And that's what we noticed in those first two games, especially with him, was like, he doesn't seem quite right. Like, he's there, and they need him to be there. And that was the thought with them was, well, he had all those injuries, and so he might actually be rested going into the playoffs instead of dealing with the end of an injury. And there, here he has something that's more of like, I don't know, a neurological problem that might not even be something that you can, you know, figure out and be gone. And that's, that really stinks for them, because the 76ers, they've never been able to fully trust the process and get through to that.
I think the process worked, though. Like, they went from off the grid irrelevant to they've been a substantial team going forward. Final hour of the week coming up next. What we learned, including the fact that what is taken can be given back. We'll take a look at day two and the weekend of the NFL draft as well. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Common Man and T-Bone are idiots. You should listen to them anyway.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
The Fan, Ohio's idiot destination.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a Friday. Get to what we learn in just a second. Have either of you, are either Kit or Odie ever full?
No.
Of their own food? Yeah. But not of other food that's around.
So Kit will stop eating.
It's impossible to feed. Kit has problems with when she wants to eat and constantly wants things added to it and doesn't like her food, and will just
finicky.
She'll take a protest and just won't eat her food. But if we have food, anything, she'll want it, even if she doesn't like it.
Reese, Odie?
No, Odie will eat and eat and eat. We've accidentally left the bag open for him and come to find his head in the bag.
I ask because growing up, we didn't feed the dogs in the sense of like, at this time they have breakfast, at this time they have lunch, at this time they have dinner. Like, there was always just dog food out.
And they came and went as needed.
They came and went as needed. So this is the first dog I've had that was not raised that way, where I feed Buddy Garrity in the morning and I feed him at lunch and then I feed him at night. And he walks around all day famished. Like, if there is a sense that there is anything to eat on it, and I know I'm feeding him enough, and you know, I know he's getting plenty, he's growing, he's a big strong strapping boy, but like, my god, man, like, are we ever going to not be famished?
Doesn't sound like it.
Well, funny, my parents' dog, they have a black lab who's like 90 pounds, but sometimes he'll get a little bit higher. And when my dad was working from home during pandemic times, he was begging even more, to the point where like, my dad had to feed him just some of the times because it was just too much. Like, he was trying to work. And Cooper got a little big. during 2020.
Coop got a little thick. Get him on awaken chops.
There you go.
Locked in.
He's an old man now, though. He's got a limp and stuff, so he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, at this point, you're fine. Yeah, Buddy's a year and a half, and he's just constantly. And I do wonder if it's just a product of, like I said, like our dogs were always just eat when they're hungry. Like it was basically like a never-ending feeder of it.
We never
fed them. Like they just ate. And none of them were fat, but it also could have been a product of their environment. Like they were running constantly.
See, we have the worst of both worlds, whereas Kit doesn't really want to eat, but she has to eat, and she won't eat just because she's hungry. And then her stomach will get upset, and then she wants to throw up, and then she wants to eat grass to make herself throw up. And it's like, if you just ate the food, you'd be fine. This is like 2 days a week we have to deal with this.
That's no good. That's not good at all. Yeah, no, none of those issues, but just a never-ending gut that wants to be filled is the, it seems to be the way that it's going. All right, final hour of the week. What'd we learn, boys?
We're not trying to do too much around here, but over the course of 5 days, you might have gleaned some stuff. Bishop and Friends present What We've Learned This Week.
Chops, I think you had this in Thing or Not a Thing. We didn't have time to get to it. But one of the bigger things that happened this week was the reinstatement of Reggie Bush's Heisman. It led to kind of opened a Pandora's box of like, well, now everything ought to be reinstated because the rules are different. We tried to explain this week that this was the Heisman Trophy Trust, not the NCAA. But Bush had a pretty pointed comment about that. It's funny. He had a press conference yesterday that quite honestly looked like the press conference of someone who had been cleared of a major crime. He had a bunch of like lawyer people standing behind him. He's at the podium and he's addressing these things.
It was
also
kind of celebratory in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was strange. It was different. The quote here was, it was more being labeled a cheater. The trophy being taken away was painful, but being labeled a cheater was far worse because I never cheated. There was no proof of that I've ever cheated.
They also reiterated that he's not done with his defamation lawsuit against them, and that's the reason. He doesn't want to be labeled a cheater for it, and I agree with him. He wasn't a cheater.
Is he suing the Heisman Trust, or is he suing the NCAA?
The NCAA. He's suing the NCAA, yeah. Because the Heisman Trust, that's what they were falling back on. They were like, well, if you were deemed ineligible by the NCAA, then we're going to take it back from you. And it's not really clear exactly what the Heisman Trust and the NCAA, if they came to any sort of agreement, or if the Heisman Trust just finally decided enough was enough. My guess is that's probably more likely because the NCAA doesn't seem to want to go back on anything. But as far as like the defamation lawsuit goes, I don't. Those are weird and figuring out if he can win it. But I do think it was wrong that, yeah, he was labeled as a cheater. He didn't do anything that made him like materially better at football.
Well, he was still just a great athlete. From the other side of it, though, like, how is he going to prove that what happened to him after his USC career harmed his ability to make a living or to be? I mean, he was a first round pick, high pick of the Saints. He had a good NFL career, and then he was the face of a pregame show on Fox. It's not like what are the damages?
He wasn't able to go back to USC until 2020.
Right, but usually in defamation, you're looking for financial restitution. How are you going to prove that financially you were damaged by what they did?
Maybe it's a spite lawsuit and he's suing for $1.
Now that I can get behind. I think you can get behind a spite lawsuit if that's the way you're going to go. But like, he was a pretty hip NFL player, and he was, as I said, he was on the desk on Fox, and so it didn't harm him in that way.
It does feel like with this that the Heisman Trust initially said that they, while recognized the changes in the college athletic landscape, were going to wait for the NCAA to allow Bush back before reinstating the Heisman. They decided not to, and they did not wait for the NCAA to say anything. And so it does feel to me like Reggie Bush filed this lawsuit so that he could get the NCAA to reverse course on their decision, thus opening the Heisman Trust to do what eventually they ended up doing. And I wonder if the NCAA can't and hasn't said anything about this because they're still involved in that lawsuit.
If he wins a defamation lawsuit, though, what door does that open up for the NCAA?
A lot.
This is the other part of it. Like, if it does get to court, he will win.
They hate the NCAA.
He's going to win because they never have ground to stand on any of this stuff. And so as soon as that happens, he's going to win. So if you're how many fights can they fight? I mean, that thing is,
as long as the checks keep cashing from the basketball tournament, they're going to fight it forever.
It's propping it up the best it can. The other really, I thought the probably the most interesting story of the week, and Paul Feinbaum on Thursday threw some water on it just from the standpoint of one of the people involved is Derek Dooley. But at least there is now conversation amongst the group of five about developing their own playoff. It's funny, and Reese, you obviously an alumnus of a group of five school, I have not heard anybody who is tangentially connected to a group of five, either or even directly, alumnus, anything, who does not want this. Not one. I've not heard one negative thing saying, no, don't do this. It feels like universally. Now, I'm not polling people at Boise, to be fair, and I'm not UNLV and Nevada and the rest of those schools, but everybody that I talk to around here went to a MAC school or went to a school similar, they're all like, yeah, do this 10 years ago.
Yeah, I do think there is, there's probably a difference. And if you talk to MAC alums or if you talk to alums of schools like Boise State who have kind of tasted, who have had a bite at that apple before where they've had national prominence.
Yeah.
And maybe they will say to you, no, our school is just as capable of making that group of five spot in the big boy college football playoff. It is funny, the Derek Dooley thing and the private equity money that's behind it. I wonder if there hasn't been more initial push for this from actual representatives of group of five schools because the money isn't officially there, or because the landing spot for a group of five playoff isn't officially there. And if they still feel, at least outwardly, oh no, we deserve a spot at the actual 12 teamer.
Well, the Super League also had a group behind it that it didn't sound like they were very interested in working with. But the thing is, they're letting these people into the rooms and the conversations into their boardrooms. And that's the important part, and why, like, it feels like the Super League, whatever it's going to be, does feel like something that the SEC and the Big Ten are going to kind of spearhead and go for. And the group of five, maybe they don't go with Derek Dooley because, yeah, he is kind of a joke amongst the college football world. But yeah, they're talking about it, and they, not only the people who went to these MAC schools, like Bo was talking about, but the people in charge of these MAC schools and other group of five schools seem interested in it and think that it is the right move. So who cares if it doesn't go with the private equity and Dooley part of it? I think this is something they do want to pursue. Maybe they'll do it on their own. Do they need private equity? As far as I'm concerned, they already figure out with the bowl systems. Can't those sponsors come in and TV numbers? Like, wouldn't it be able to do itself? I don't understand why a third group has to come in all of a sudden to put together a postseason in college sports.
It's because I just think the reason is they need I don't think they need the third group, but they almost need their own representation. They need somebody to organize them. And that's probably where the private equity comes in, is almost, you now have somebody to organize an arbiter, almost like a commissioner of the group of five.
Yes, an office of the group of five. And because we've talked about college football in general needs a commissioner. That's, well, you have a big problem with it.
You have a two-pronged commissioner right now, and it's Petitti and Sankey, and they're running it. Here's what I would say to anybody who thinks, like, any hesitation from the group of five or worried about what the financial windfall would be. What exactly are you walking away from? One team getting in, that's it. Split amongst five of you. Like, what are you walking away from?
Push back, just because that's the known.
But it's a little known.
It's a little known, but it's better than complete unknown.
Maybe I'm misreading it.
As of right now.
Yeah. No, that would be it. Like, we're in the dance.
I think everybody is taking this 2 years of the 12-team playoff before the real CFP contract starts again in 2026. Everyone is taking it as a trial run. If there is any bit of positivity to come out of from the group of five, maybe they do stick with it, but I just don't foresee that happening. But everybody wants to see, what does this 12-team actually look like? Let's get out of theory. Let's get into practice.
Because then you could hypothetically say, well, we got one in on 12. Maybe when it goes to 14, we get two. Or 16, we get two. Like, what's the potential there for this? But just do it already. Like, just do your own playoff. Enough of this. Enough.
Yeah, I do think the one thing that's going to be really fascinating to watch over the next 2 years, I think you're right, we've talked about that, like, this is a 12-team, two-year, let's see how this goes, let's test the dates, let's see how it rates, and then there will be a reorganization when they get that another bite at the apple. I'm very curious the view of the SEC and the Big Ten, and if they will be willing to not be pushed against each other, because both probably want, they're going to control it. Do they want to get bigger, or do they want to keep it all for themselves? They could certainly go at it alone. They don't need to invite anybody else. But if they do invite anybody else, how do they make sure that they're not being kind of leveraged against one another? And it seems like, and we had Paul on Thursday, and I asked him it directly, and this is what I'm hearing, it's what he's hearing, that Petitti and Sankey, they're lockstep. that there will be that. So in other words, Florida State's not going to be able to leverage the Big Ten against the SEC. North Carolina's not going to be able to leverage, and that's probably the correct one, the Big Ten against the SEC going forward. So,
speaking of Florida State, the Florida AG now joining in on the lawsuit against the ACC.
Yeah. Is it a re-election year for him?
It's a contract, man. It's a contract. You signed it.
It's Florida, man, though. This is my reality.
Well, that's true. There is plenty of that. All right, we'll go around the league. Day two of the draft tonight, some of the big headlines, including the realization that Cousins was not contacted at all in what was the story of round one and what will be some of the stories of round two. That's coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If you miss a live show, you can catch the podcast. If you miss the podcast, our hosts have volunteered to have dinner with you.
Ma, the meatloaf! The
Fan. Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cash back in the industry with up to 5% cash back on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
After putting up with Dom Tiberi for a decade, the broadcast gods gave Bo these two. This is Bishop and Friends.
Hey, it's your Uncle Bo here, kids. You want to get away this summer? No better solution than hitting the road with the RV from RCD RV. You've seen the lines at the airlines. You know what you're in for there. You get underneath the stars. You get in that fresh mountain air. You get out by a lake. It's a win for everybody. The convenience, the ease of use, all of it. You're in control of your own destiny with an RV from RCD. It could all be yours. The journey starts at RCD RV. They got one that'll meet every single budget. Campers as low as $13,995. Ohio's best selection of pre-owned travel trailers, fifth wheelers, motorhomes. Three locations in Central Ohio to serve you. Online anytime at rcdrv.com. This is a line from Tom Pelissero last night that caught my attention on the draft. On Good Morning Football, rather, this morning, he said, quote, in relationship to the Atlanta Falcons drafting Michael Penix when just signing Kirk Cousins, this isn't a relationship that's gone south. This is cheating on your wife on the honeymoon.
Yeah, and one of the problems, too, is I saw this. Sam Monson had retweeted it, but it was Fontenot, like, kind of trying to give a little bit more about it at the end of the night last night. So these tweets were posted around midnight. Full quote from Fontenot: if you believe in a quarterback, you have to take him. And if he sits for 4 or 5 years, that's a great problem to have because we're doing so well at that position. So it's as simple as if you see a guy you believe in at that position, you have to take him. Don't say 4 or 5 years.
Jeez.
That was the wrong amount of years to throw out there. And then also, because we're doing so well at that position, yeah, in like an abstract sense right now, it does look like you're doing better, but you weren't doing well between Matt Ryan and now, like at all. It was terrible.
It's a wild pick.
It's interesting and it's fun. It's the fun part about this, right? Whereas you see a draft that makes a lot of people shake their heads. It makes a lot of people feel one way or the other. Like, no one's got apathy to Michael Penix Jr. to Atlanta at 8. And those defending this pick have to do what I feel is a lot of stretching. Because this guy, you know, when you give Kirk Cousins a bunch of money, that's already a decision I go, huh.
Well, I don't. And it's also the sense of urgency to it. It's fine. Yeah, take as many bites at the apple as a quarterback you want, but you just paid this guy. He's coming off a major surgery. I get it. But you have kind of everything else, and you have the 8th pick in the draft, and your talent is greater than the 8th pick in the draft. You could have got a dude. They could have got the best defensive player in the draft. They could have gotten that. Instead, and here's the other thing, and this is probably why it's it. I don't think Cousins cares too much that they drafted a quarterback. I think he's looking at it from the perspective of, we could have got a starter, like a plug-and-play starter, to give us more help, and we could go win the NFC, and instead, you pick somebody with the 8th pick that's not going to play for a couple of years. My guess is that's what his beef's about. Raheem Morris, was asked about Cousins' reaction to the pick. He said, quote, he got called on the clock, obviously, because of sensitive time with the issues of what you're going, of what you got going on. It's never the right time to talk to a quarterback about those things. And reactions are always going to be private when it comes to those things. Unless Kirk decides to tell you some of the things that are whatever they may be, but he's a competitor just like all of us. And you can always expect those things to go just like you kind of think. That is the biggest bunch of word salad ever.
Unless you think Kirk said something.
Yeah. Translation, Kirk's pissed because we could have added somebody who would have helped us win now, and we are in a win now mode, and instead we're going to draft somebody who's going to help us potentially 2 or 3 years down the road. I'm with you. I don't mind the pick from the standpoint of bites at the apple, keep hitting at it, long-term planning, all of it, but it also it kind of is, what's that AR says, Humanalytics?
Yeah.
It doesn't take that into account. It might be the smart thing to, if you love the guy, to have him there when he's 26, 2 years down the road, but it doesn't take into account the room, your new veteran quarterback, and the fact that you are a really good roster who can win the South next year, and you could have added to that with a dude. Like, imagine if they drafted Rome Odunziel, and you pair him with London and Bijan and Pitts. Good Lord, that's a lot going on.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, I mean, if it works, great. That's why I'm very interested in it, and I don't hate it, but it can also blow up in your face. So could another top 10 pick, but we don't know that right now. If it does hit, then it works out, but it does feel like it's a little bit too much like Madden video game draft simulator type stuff that you're almost trying to get smarter than it. Again, if it works, then I don't hate it. But I also don't get the line from Raheem Morris where he's like, it's never a good time to talk to a quarterback with this. Like, well, I mean, yeah, I understand it's like privileged information, but if you trust the guy with $90 million guaranteed, can't you trust Kirk Cousins? He's very mature. I mean, we saw him in the quarterback show. Like, I'm thinking some guy could be mums the word if you just told him, hey, we are thinking if the right guy is available that we might take a quarterback at 8. You could totally have that conversation. I don't understand why teams always say that when they do go against their quarterback and he's like, I'm completely blindsided by this. Have the conversation with the guy.
When you talk about like when it hits, if it hits sometime in the next 2 years, the Kirk Cousins experiment was a massive failure.
Yeah, the threading the needle on it is you're a contender for 2 years with Cousins and then you pass it over to him. I mean, that'll be the threading the needle. And the problem is it makes the next 2 years largely two separate paths that you're following. You're following, hey, let's contend. And had we drafted somebody who could come in and go, then that would help in the contending part, all the while developing down the road, hoping this kid can be developed under Cousins. I'm with you. I think that there's no question Cousins was mature enough to be able to handle this if you were honest with him. The thing that it goes back to, though, the subterfuge here. He didn't even meet with them. Penix didn't even meet with the Falcons. They talked to him for 45 minutes at the combine. That's it.
Did they just, like, did
Fondo just kinda, love him?
Yeah, did they
just, because it looked like Blank didn't know.
I don't get it. Like, were they just surprised that he was available at 8? Like, that's also something that, like, he was going to be available at 8, really, no matter what. Like, that he was not going to be picked by somebody else before the 8th overall pick. So why wasn't it something that you guys looked into more if it was a guy you were interested in?
I don't know. It's the damnedest thing. A couple other things from yesterday in round one. The Chargers were approached by both the Patriots and Vikings about trading Justin Herbert. They were quickly turned down. Smart due diligence, right? We thought if the only place to me that could have done a Herbert trade would have been Chicago at number one. That potentially could have done it, but
instead
then
their other offensive players went to Chicago.
Correct. But they would have been in a situation where financially they would have been very cash trapped to make all of it work. The other thing that was floating around yesterday was the potential trading of Brandon Ayuk from the 49ers. They draft Ricky Pearsall with the 31st pick in the draft. A bit of a surprise there. Kyle Shanahan post on this. It doesn't seem that likely, to be honest, but I'm still on the table. If someone offered Jed and John good stuff for me, I'm going to be out of here. John Lynch saying, I know that we're continuing to have positive talks with Ayuk and we are really efforting to get something done with him. We're excited about continuing down the path and Brandon being part of a team. Debo is part of this team, a big part of this team. We feel great about the group that we have. They are in a position where because at some point they're going to have to play Purdy, going to have to pay him. But until that point, they can just keep adding to the arsenal. And that's what this is. And Purcell is actually like the perfect guy for Shanahan.
Reeser, fits it perfectly. Reeser was talking about that live stream with C.J. Stroud, and when Pearsall got picked, that was the one time C.J. Stroud like really visibly showed emotion. It was not like he was like upset, but he was like, oh, man. He like threw his head back, put his hands on his face. Apparently, that's a guy who has stood out to some people. And funnily enough, because you know how eligibility and how long these guys have been around, Ayuk and Pearsall played together in college.
Really?
They had 1 year of crossover. Yeah, I was reading this morning, which is not something I would have had off the top of my head. But yeah, so they know each other. So Ayuk actually texted, I think it was Lynch, but it could have been Shanahan, one of the two, when they made the pick, and was like, fire pick, guys.
So the in terms of CJ, the Texans don't pick until 10 in the second round today. So the first
Saw that, and I was like, well, there's no way he was sticking around until then.
You wouldn't think. Bills, Pats, Cards, Commies, Chargers, Titans, Panthers, Commies, Packers, Texans. Tonight, the Bengals pick number 17, 49th overall. Steelers pick 19, number 51 overall. And then the Browns, rather, 22, which is good for 54th overall in the second round. Some perspective on what he saw last night and some of the big news around the college football landscape with our good buddy Doug Lee Maurice. That's coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We've been your Jackets flagship station since day one. All the goals, all the action, all the memories. Your home for the Columbus Blue Jackets, The Fan, Ohio Sports Desk.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat, because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
Friday, 11:30. Time to get smarter. Set out on the Bryan Heating Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. Conversation with good buddy Doug Lee Maurice, the podcast, Kings of Columbus, Kings of the North. Hey there, pal. Do you like the draft?
Yeah, I like the draft. Yeah, I do.
You're most proud, I believe I had that, and you're most disappointed, I did not have that. Not talking about last night, but just since you've been covering the sport, is there a guy that you're like, I knew he was going to be good and he was, and then conversely, is there a guy, I knew he was going to be good and he wasn't?
Oh, man. I mean, I think a lot of people in Columbus, I sort of thought C.J. Stroud's intelligence, accuracy, anticipation, I wrote about him like solving problems before they happened, like the idea of all this test stuff. Like, I thought CJ would be great. I thought CJ was different with the way he analyzed football, and then talking to him, he always thought he would translate even better to the NFL than he did college. So I think there's a lot of people in Columbus, especially, you know, the way the pre-draft process went for him, and everybody around Ohio State was like, what are you talking about? This guy's super smart. So I feel good about that one, and I really did think Billy Price coming out of Ohio State might be like a 10-year All-Pro as a center or guard in the NFL. And again, I thought Billy was really smart and athletic, good feet for a guard. And I was just a little surprised that didn't hit in that way.
Nobody in the portal of note yet for the Buckeyes. This thing is Tuesday. You and I talked about this a little bit last week. Are you surprised that there hasn't been anybody?
I guess I'm not surprised. I mean, to me, right, when so many guys stay, that initial wave, I thought, okay, there might even be more. I know they lost some people in the secondary and, you know, Kai Stokes and people like that, but you kind of knew what the deal was. So, you know, I thought maybe some of the younger, you know, third-year defensive ends now, right? Like Kenyatta Jackson and Caden Curry, and it's like, well, JT and Jack stay, and now, okay, they're still not going to start in year three, but they knew that before spring. So I don't know. I guess the thing with Ohio State is what changed in spring that would make somebody say, well, I didn't go in the portal before, but I'm going to go in now. I feel like they were so kind of locked in on the team they are that, you know, they kind of had their movement, and they did lose a decent number of, you know, second and third team guys in the first portal wave, but I think I'm not surprised that there hasn't been a second wave here.
It's the damnedest thing to me on the quarterback thing. Can they have five? Do they have enough numbers to make five scholarship quarterbacks work?
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching a lot of the other spring games, and sure. You know, there's people talking like, hey, you can't have it. You know, like there are schools anymore where it's like they have two and the third string guys transferring, and it's like, man, I don't know what we're going to do. But I still do think it makes sense for them that Brown and Howard stay and continue to have this competition into August. Aaron Noland and Julian Sayin are both so young. Why would they be in a hurry? And then the pivot point's Lincoln Keenholtz. But if he's not going somewhere where he thinks he's going to start this year, right, then maybe stay, fight it out, learn, be in a good room, work with Chip Kelly, still have Ryan Day. You know, if you're not demanding to start, then this isn't a bad place to be, which is like their Joe Burrow pitch all over again. Like, stay here and learn, and then when it's time for you to go play, if it's not happening here, then go.
I think that's easier when you're coming out of a spring where you rolled reps, and I'm wondering if that was part of the philosophy there, is let's get all of these guys a lot of throws. You can't do that next summer. So that'll be something I think to watch. I agree with your point that it's just as smart of those guys to develop, but also, like, they're coming off of a thing where they're like, hey, I got as many reps as Will and Devin. So why would I go anywhere? Right. I'm getting all the looks I want. So I think that's a little bit of a part of it. What did you happen to notice what, I kind of peek in every once in a while on what's going on at Colorado. Deion Sanders has his kids on Instagram saying DM me for offensive starters, DM me for defensive starters. He has not recruited at all high school kids.
Right.
They did get Dallin, which is good, but then he lost his running back prize he had a year ago. I'm kind of coming to the real, I kind of think he's going to be done there after this year. Where are you on what he's doing out there? It's such a curiosity for me.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, they just revamped everything so much that they really embraced sort of like the free agency part of this and guys in and guys out. And their offensive line was so bad last year, but they have basically five new starters on the offensive line in there. As you said, I think they lost their top two backs from last year, and Dallin Hayden looks like he's going to be the number one guy. You know, it's hard because, you know, I think a lot of what Deion Sanders has done for Colorado is amazing, right? We're talking about Colorado on a Columbus sports show, right? There's only one reason for that.
Yep.
But then you've got to double down and I think have a little more substance to it, right? And so you just see other people, like, not to throw a curveball here, but I watched the Syracuse spring game and what's happening at Syracuse and Fran Brown, who brought a lot of energy, but there's a lot of substance of what Syracuse is doing as well. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's just it's a little bit of a contrast of like, you want to get people excited, but then you got to dig in. Right. And like Fran Brown is digging in, man. Yeah. And when it's stuff like this with Deion and his kids doing the portal stuff, and like, as you said, the high school recruiting is not there. It just makes you think, like, are they digging in? Because there's great opportunity here, and they're in a better place than they were before Deion Sanders got there. So he has helped them. But, man, there's great opportunity there, and it feels like they're not maximizing what they could be because they're not doing a lot of the other stuff that most programs are doing.
When you look back, I saw this from John Cazano, longtime writer at the Oregonian and radio host out there now, and he had a tweet, something to the effect of the Pac-12 had a team in the national championship game. They had something like 7 of the first 15 picks in the draft. They had Colorado at the time. They didn't know Deion was going to do that, but they were the story of September. The fact that they didn't get a media deal done, and I think all of us would have wanted that, right? We all would have wanted a Pac-12 to exist. I think that that's good. Failure in leadership to what end? I mean, isn't that a 30 for 30 waiting to happen?
Yeah. It also is, unfortunately for everybody, a reminder of it's still TV ratings, not necessarily on field success that does it, you know. And as good as they were last year, they also had the history where they just were not, they were not competitively involved in the college football playoffs in any meaningful way. The fact that the flagship program, USC, kind of fell off a cliff for a while before they got Lincoln Riley in there, like, that had a devastating effect. Imagine if Ohio State had fallen off a cliff for 8 years, what that would have done to the Big Ten, where you're not part of the national conversation. That, you know, there was enough, like, internal damage in terms of popularity and interest, and they were always fighting the time zones to some degree. So it's one of these things in the end that I still would argue Oregon, Washington, UCLA, USC, are they worse off or better off to be part of the Big Ten, the excitement of this, of course, all the travel stuff, but like what their future is, I think they're okay. Colorado, Utah, Arizona, Arizona State, are they really worse off in the Big 12? I think mm-hmm. Utah's going to have great rivalries down there. Like, so it's one of those things where like the Pac-12 as an entity, I get it, but again, are people walking around wearing Pac-12 shirts? You care about your school. And I think most of the schools will like probably be okay. Cal in the ACC, maybe not. But those other eight that I mentioned, I think have a way to be okay, but it's a reminder of it still is about TV eyeballs, and that's not – it's related to on-field success and great players, but it's not the exact same thing, and they were always going to be fighting a bit of an uphill battle there, I think.
All right, buddy, I'll get you out of here on this one. You said you watched a lot of spring games. What is a spring game you watched and your opinion changed of the program most dramatically?
Yeah, probably three. I mean, you're going to have to pull me back from picking Syracuse to win the ACC. The way things look in the spring, I'm sure you've talked about Kyle McCord, and yeah. They just have a lot of good players in there. Rhonda Gadsden, their great tight end, still isn't playing. Well, he's getting healthy. He's going to impact them. They have two good backs. Like, the ACC is wide open. I thought Syracuse looked really good. I was down on Michigan before their spring game, and I'm still curious about the quarterback situation, but I thought they looked like Michigan. Like, it mm-hmm. was a reminder. You know, like, they still have a great front four. They still are pretty strong in the secondary. I love Donovan Edwards. I think he's going to run the ball. Like, there's still a lot there, and I thought there was enough from Alex Orji that, like, I actually think they'll be okay. I did not have them as a playoff team before spring. I might have them now. And then I've loved Iowa, but their quarterback situation, like Cade McNamara is still limping around with the ACL injury from last year, not full go. And I think everyone's takeaway from Iowa was they need to get another quarterback in there because their whole season can't hinge on Cade McNamara's health. Yep. But if they get okay quarterback play, I think the offensive coordinator is not great, but he's so much better than what they had before. And the defense is a top five defense in the country. So I think Iowa has a chance to be on the edge of the playoff conversation, but they need to make sure they're set at QB, and I think they have to add somebody.
Great stuff as always, my friend. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, brother. Talk to you soon.
All right, that's the great Doug LeMaurice, the podcast, Kings of Columbus, Kings of the North. He has you covered on those avenues. Three things on a Friday up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We know everything about you. We know you love the Buckeyes. We know you love the Jackets. We know you're wearing a red shirt. I just freaked the hell out of someone. So bad.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
If you say something with enough confidence, it must be true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Hey, Reese, what do you have in the poll?
Daily Fan Poll sponsored by ER Auto Care, masters of our craft. Today's Fan Poll asks, which first-round quarterback will have the best rookie campaign in the NFL? Right now, 33% of you think it's Caleb Williams of the Chicago Bears. 30% say Jaden Daniels of the Commanders. 15% say Drake May. Other is getting 20%.
That's the scarlet and gray colored glasses, right? Because McCarthy's in the best spot.
Yeah, other I was thinking Caleb. Who's in the best spot?
Caleb,
and I got
Caleb has the most weapons, but JJ's playing in a dome with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison in an offense that fits his skill set that will be curated to his talents with O'Connell. So yeah. That's great.
I think
that's
Penix is in a decent spot, but obviously he's not the starter.
Somebody just tweeted out that like Cousins is still rehabbing that Achilles. Mm. And so, like, Penix is going to take all of the snaps in minicamp.
That's a good point.
The reverse Kansas City model.
Yeah. Right. Pretty wild. All right. Three things. Hit it.
One, two, three things.
Sponsored by Custom Air. Custom Air. Custom Solutions. Custom Comfort.
Number one for me, I can acknowledge that something isn't for me and also be very impressed by it. So, I'm thinking of last night and those opening shots from the NFL draft in Detroit. Would I stand in the cold on a Thursday night in the middle of a street, two football fields away from a stage, to to watch a middle-aged man name young men's names out loud over a loudspeaker, then shake their hand and hug them? No, I would not. But it's also awesome. I mean, those were some of the coolest scenes of Detroit. It's funny, I haven't thought about the Tigers in a very, very long time, but you would see like that Tigers Old English D juxtaposed in the crowd. Like, Detroit's just a damn good sports city. And here's the other deal. If the NFL is going to keep taking these things around, if you take them to places like Detroit, Cleveland, Kansas City, Pittsburgh, Philly, these places, you're going to draw 200,000 people on a Thursday to watch everything. It's not for me, but God bless you. And the NFL wins about as big as it can on stuff like that.
Another note from the NFL draft from me. Roger Goodell probably needs like a normal person to tell him that his casual look is mostly just off-putting. The just undoing like the top two buttons. Like, the problem is he took something that he normally wears and just took the tie off. And it's like, no, it has to be all different clothes. If you're going for a casual look, they are different clothes. This can't just look like you had a tough day and decided to take your tie off. I thought it was weird when he was on the desk with Greeny, and I thought, well, maybe he's just not fully ready. But no, that was his plan, to wear that blue pressed suit shirt unbuttoned with a tie with a sport coat over it. Maybe he was wearing jeans. I couldn't quite tell, but it did not work enough to pull it all together. So bring somebody into your team that can tell you, hey, that's not how that works.
I think he makes $60 million a year, and he's like to the point in his life. Whatever. He's also at an age like, yeah, whatever I want.
I'm going to get booed anyways.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I think I can speak for at least the show, probably the station, when we're sending a lot of love to a friend of this program, Aaron Portsline, mm-hmm, who's getting a kidney transplant today. He had an issue back in October, and I think he went through a couple of different donors. It's a really cool story that a couple of news stations have picked up on it, but someone within the Blue Jackets organization, one of the communication, yeah, specialists, had a kidney match for Porty, so he's getting that done today. He echoed, be an organ donor. You never know when it's going to save somebody's life, because some of those who came forward to donate to Porty that weren't matches ended up being matches for somebody else.
It's an amazing story. It truly is an amazing story, and obviously a very big day that I don't know if he ever thought would get here. So God bless our great friend Aaron Portsline today, and those who helped, and donate if you can. Number two for me, speaking of the draft, two things. Number one, draft room videos are undefeated. Like, there's one going around of Minnesota's of Kwesi Adofo-Mensah telling Kevin O'Connell that they're getting DJ Turner in addition to JJ McCarthy, and O'Connell is just lighting up. The other part of it, I have never seen one draft room where people weren't thrilled with their pick until last night, the look on Arthur Blank's face. Everybody else, when you see a video from a draft room, a war room, they're thrilled. We got our guy. You never have anybody go up and say, we didn't get our guy. Everybody gets their guy. They're always number one on their board, with the exception of Arthur Blank, who Fontenot was very clearly explaining, what did you just do? It's also amazing to me that he did it without Blank's say. That's the appearance of it. That the owner would just be out?
Like, not even know they were about to, yeah, do it? Like, it's not wild. Even just be unsure about it, but yeah, like, confused by the pick.
You had the Jaguars pick, like, playing in on the Tony Khan's necks hurt thing? Like, this, yeah, was, it's just
ultimate
surreal.
Ultimate tough guy by Tony Khan. Take a pile driver on a Wednesday, draft ready to go Friday.
Jeez.
Second one for me. I'm having some friends over Saturday for like a little bonfire hangout, but I was like, oh, I wonder what time, if it is on Saturday. Sometimes they play Sunday. My Major League Rugby team, NOLA Gold, they're playing at 7 p.m. So I guess everyone's getting introduced to Major League Rugby at my house on Saturday. And hopefully they can get a win this week. They've lost three straight since I've started paying attention. But they're taking on Anthem Rugby Carolina, the worst team in the league, 0-7 so far. So let's go Gold.
Best of luck to everybody running the Cap City Half Marathon tomorrow. It's supposed to rain early, but then it should be nicer later in the morning. Also, this is your warning to everybody else out there that a ton of roads in and around downtown are going to be closed off for the Cap City Half Marathon tomorrow.
Number three for me, I'm convinced, and I understand it's the most elevated age of any of my boys, but that sixth grade boys are just the worst. Now, maybe they're even worserer as their seventh graders or eighth graders. We had all three boys kind of practicing lacrosse in the same area. I look over at the sixth graders. They are whacking each other hard with their sticks. There are two defenders. They have those long poles that are jousting. They are jousting each other. Like,
just running at each other?
Yeah, and jousting. It was insane. And it's like, just a reminder, like I always tell the parents, because I've had these kids in a lot of stuff, like they're just at the age right now where they're a bunch of little jerks, and that's just where you are. Just buckle in.
I'm not saying I'm an expert, but I've been to the Ren Faire enough times and watched the jousting performance enough to to know that it's not going to work. Like, that's not the point of jousting. One, you're supposed to be in armor and have a shield, and actually breaking the jousting pole is part of it. That's a way you can get points, but you can also knock the guy off the horse. If you're using a metal lacrosse stick, I know they are breakable, but I don't think these kids are going to break them running into each other. So you're not going to break it. You're not going to score any points that way. There's no horse to knock a guy off. So what is it you say you're doing here?
Being punks, being jerks. That's all they're doing.
That's my third thing.
According to Deadpool and Wolverine director Sean Levy, you'll not have to be up to date on the MCU before going to see that movie. It comes out on July 26th, and because I haven't. So when I saw this, it looks great, but I wasn't prepared to do a lot of homework on it because I just don't care really about the MCU anymore. Like, I like Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool. He says, quote, "This movie is built for entertainment with no obligation to come prepared with prior research," end quote.
Good.
That's a good way to advertise your film, especially if it is part of a longer thing that how many people realistically are keeping up on anymore.
Yeah, no, good for him on that. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Rothman and Ice up next. We're back Monday. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Matty Ice is currently bathing himself in creamy jalapeno dip. And I've officially run out of ways to tease this show. Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays at noon.
The Fan. This is a Fan Action Update.
This Action Update is brought to you by Tipico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. The Guardians open up a 3-game weekend series with the Atlanta Braves. Both teams in first place in their divisions. Cleveland is a big plus 170 underdog today. The Reds have won 5 of their last 7 games and are also an underdog as they open up a series with the Rangers. Reds are plus 140 on the money line today. For your Tipico Action Update, I'm Scotty Vegas.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each 3-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit LindsayHonda.com.
WBNSFM HD1 Columbus. The Fan.
Good afternoon. I'm Ryan Baker. Round one of the NFL draft came and went, and to no surprise, the Bears drafted Caleb Williams at number one. The only Buckeye to be drafted last night, Marvin Harrison Jr., went number 4 to the Arizona Cardinals, and he was proud to be the first wide receiver taken.
I'm just super blessed to be here, really. There's a lot of great receivers in this draft class. It's an honor to be first. We got to go and put that work in now.
At number 18, the Bengals drafted Georgia offensive tackle Amarius Mims. The Browns don't pick until number 54 tonight in the second round. The draft resumes at 7 p.m. with rounds 2 and 3. The Cleveland Guardians start a series with the Braves in Atlanta at 7:20. Logan Allen versus Chris Sale, the pitching matchup. The Cincinnati Reds head to Texas to take on the Rangers at 8:05. Graham Ashcraft opposes Nathan Eovaldi. This Sports Center brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each 3-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.